Welcome back to Blaze of Gumption, episode 104. This is called Extra Galactic Stuffy Stuff. We are Blaze of Gumption. We recap BCTV in a flash. My name is Jessica, and I'm here with
May
and Tatiana.
And if you would like to participate, get interactive with us, you can contact us on Twitter at DCTV Gumption. You can send us an email, ladieswgumption@gmail.com. Or you can send us an ask on Tumblr, ladieswgumption.tumblr.com. You can also find all of our previous episodes on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, or on our Podomatic website, ladieswgumption.podomatic.com. Also, if you are a Patreon, first and foremost, thank you for your support. It helps keep our podcast going because podcast fees are expensive, apparently.
unfortunately.
Yes, and to thank you, we have exclusive content for you in the hiatus weeks when there aren't any shows on. And when there are shows on, you get to hear the podcast first, 24 hours in advance. We got some anon feedback for Witcher when we're getting ready to do that. So thank you for sending in that feedback. So look forward to that. In the news section, there are a couple of bits of news that we knew about but forgot to put into the podcast previously, so we'll just like recap it here. First and foremost, in DCTV news, we heard from Damon Gumpton that he will not be returning for Black Lightning season 4, and that was confirmed by the show as well, which is, I mean, it was really early because we're still in the back half of Black Lightning season 3, so it's not really, you can't really say how he leaves, but what do you guys think of his announcement?
Once, I don't know, maybe with the way that things shake out with Markovia, it'll be like there'll be a whole revamping of the police force. But I think it's unfortunate because he is kind of leading the, you know, rebellion with
Anissa.
The resistance. So we're getting to see him be more active than he's ever been. So that's unfortunate. I don't know if he's going to just die as a hero, you know, or get out of Dodge because it's so awful there.
Yeah, I mean, I was really surprised, to be honest, because it was just kind of random. He came on Twitter and was like, I'm not coming back. And he had learned about it weeks before in December, like, I guess before their Christmas break. And I don't know. I mean, part of me thinks that he won't necessarily die, because if he was going to die, I don't know that he would have said anything. But at the same time, I'm really surprised because we've always been concerned that he was going to die, but he's also been one of the major characters besides the Pierce family in the show. And he's really, like Tati said, he's come into his own this season. He's done a lot of things. So I think that's strange that they're seeing him off, essentially.
Yeah. I kind of wonder, you know, I mean, I was going to say if it was mutual or not, but I mean, like, Damon doesn't really have any control over what the writers do with the story, but, yeah, I agree with you. Like, I'm not sure that he would say it and then die. Like, I don't know if he would have said that if he was going to die, because that'd be, like, a huge spoiler. But, yeah. I mean, like, even if he does die and he just kind of, like, spoiled the season, what are they going to do? Fire him? So, I don't know. but we'll see how that all shakes out in the upcoming weeks on Black Lightning. Also, I don't really know if this was more like, I don't know if it was confirmed, or if it was just like a heavily hinted or their possibility, but for DCU, Titan season 3, we're hearing that Barbara Gordon is going to be in the show for season 3, which, I don't know. They keep adding characters and not doing stuff. Yeah. Their other characters.
Does anybody care at this point? Because it's just like they're either going to fuck her up or have her be in one episode and then leave, or who knows?
Right.
Because everybody else is just all over the place. So it's like, why add characters when you still have the ones you do have and haven't done anything with them?
I would want to know, like, what she would be adding to the show other than being a Dick's ex that is not already on the show, since we already have another Dick ex in Dawn, who also isn't going anywhere. So I feel like, I don't know.
They just be adding another iconic character they're going to do a disservice to. Like, what's the point?
Right. I would want her to be utilized well and not be tied to Dick, since just about every other woman on the show is, like, tied to Dick and doesn't get to shine outside of that. So, we'll see. Yeah. I guess we'll see what happens if they actually start casting that character. So, keep an eye out for that. Right. In DCEU news, Birds of Prey comes out next Friday, February the 7th.
Mm-hmm. And it's getting great reviews so far.
Great reviews, especially from heavyweights in the DC Comics industry. For example, Gail Simone got invited to go out to the WB site to watch, like, some of the filming, and she did, like, this whole thread about her experience in going there and just, like, geeking out, especially over Jurnee Smollett, who plays Black Canary. And so just kind of getting, like, when the writers of the story are that excited over the film, then I think that, you know, it's going to be, like, a really, really great film. I'm actually really, really excited to see it. What do you guys think? Or have you, for example, like, the fight scene that they released a clip of with, like, the hair tie thing, which I thought was really, like, a really, really nice way to kind of incorporate, like, what women who are, like, fighters would actually have to, like, go through and stuff like that with the hair. Obviously, you know, like, in a lot of cartoons and comics and stuff, it's, like, the focus is on, like, women being sexy or whatever and having, like, heels on in their outfits or their hair down, and it's just, like, in a fight, everything is, like, going everywhere. You get hair in your face. Like, that's really, like, really realistic, so I liked it. Although a lot of fanboys are still, like,
ooh. Oh, well, they're always going to be salty because yeah. They think if it's something's, I don't know, whatever. It's bizarre to me because it's, like, they're acting as if these characters were just created overnight for women to go watch, and these have been characters for decades at this point. So they're just acting brand new. But I'm really excited about people's general reactions to the film because it just seems like it's wild in a good way, just as the trailer showed off that it was. And
yeah.
I know we were worried about, like, the other ladies being sidelined, but it doesn't seem that that's the case, which is very exciting too, because they're, like, it's very much an ensemble cast, and that's how everyone is talking about it as such. So it's great to hear, and I'm really looking forward to seeing it as well. Like, the fight scene specifically, the way that it's shot with the camera kind of, like, panning across and slowing down and then coming back, it was just really cool. Like, I think it's much different than what we've seen from the DCEU so far.
Yeah, and there's, like, a lot of it was compared to, like, John Wick as far as the fight choreography throughout, like, the entire movie. I just have to read this comment from, like, a fanboy under the, like, hair clip thing.
God.
Because it's just, like, slow one hit, clearly zero connections, choreography awful, actors don't even look like they're trying, and the past the hair part, fourth girl power, a proper fight with tough, strong woman wouldn't worry about how her hair is looking, she'd get stuck in. A proper woman, says me, man, wouldn't worry about her hair and what her hair looks like. She's not worried about what it looks like, Dick. I don't know. Anyways.
I totally support this.
Yeah. Feedback. We had feedback for Black Lightning, Supergirl, Batwoman. Did we get a Tasha email for Arrow?
We had Batwoman feedback?
I'm pretty sure we did from...
Oh, wow. Exciting.
It was like Batwoman and Supergirl. In the same email. I think it was Celeste. Yeah. Celeste and that woman.
Oh, yay, Celeste.
I don't see a Tasha email, so that's sad.
I want, yeah, because we want to know how you feel about the finale, Tasha. Yeah. So.
Tasha doesn't love us anymore.
She doesn't have to love us anymore because the show is gone.
Exactly. She's like,
we have lost her listening.
Anyways, well, the feedback that we do have, we will put it at the end of the show sections as we go through them. This week we had four shows. We had Superbat on side A, and Arrow and Black Lightning will be on side B. Tati is our host. She will take us through it, and we'll talk about our likes, dislikes, and Lady Gumption of the Week. So moving over to part A, which is titled A Trivial Pursuit / Waffles. Tati, please take it away.
Thank you, dear, for that wonderful introduction, Jessica. And now we begin with Supergirl. Episode was called Back from the Future Part 1 because we are getting more than one episode of When Back from the Future. Jeremy Jordan returns and David Harewood directs. As Supergirl tries to thwart a toy man copycat, Win Shot Scott, I cannot remember how to pronounce his name now, oops, returns from the future and stands me and all. Meanwhile, Brainy is very, very shady. How did we feel about this episode? Do we like it? What did we like about it, rather?
Well, I mean, it was definitely like the Neonal Appreciation Hour on Supergirl. And I think it really hit me how much like I've missed her in this episode and having her actively have a story. So like Wynn's fangirling over Nia, like lots of mentions of Nira, the fact that Wynn's Legion powers are modeled after Nia, all like just chef's kiss. Great stuff. I think I really love their conversation, especially on the rooftop, when Nia's like a little bit unsure about her dream powers and the breakup it's affecting with Brainy's affecting her more than she thought it was, and she can't like dream right. And Wynn gives her some like patented neuronal advice about how Nia should never let anyone question her worth. And I thought that was really beautiful just for Nia on the one hand, but I also feel like I know so much more about Nira and her personality now through Wynn that makes it even better. Like now I also stand Nira because Nira is like the best, because how Wynn talks about her and how Wynn talks about Nia. So I liked all of that. And I also like during the tiger fight, like when Wynn used Nia's powers in a way that Nia didn't even know that she could do. And she's like, man, my powers can do that. And then like we also saw like her, you know, form her dream like waves into like a whip to battle the tigers. And she just really got a chance to shine and expand her power set in this episode. And I love that it was like mostly independent from Brainy. I like her and Brainy's chemistry together. I think Jesse Rath and Nicole Maines have really good chemistry together, but I think that especially a lot last season, they just got kind of stuck in this kind of pair and never really got to do anything apart from each other. So I do like that this episode was more kind of forced that a little bit, and so that Nia got to shine and show her personality apart from just being the other half of this combination with her and Brainy. And I think at the beginning of the episode, she was maybe lying to herself a little bit about being fine. But by the end of the episode, it actually really did feel like she was on her way to being fine, which is really good. And then plus knowing that there's a part two, obviously, and that Wynn is still around for, I think he's either one or two more episodes, because I think maybe he was signed on for three. I hope we really get to squeeze in all of the Wynn and Nia time that we possibly can out of this relationship, and that Wynn can help her develop her powers more since he's from the future and he knows so much about them. So I'm really hopeful for another kind of Nia training session that hopefully helps to open up her powers a lot more and become an actual story for her, because she's been missing for a couple episodes. Other things not Nia. John's tower bunker is a great idea. Love it. And especially now that DEO is like dark and full of terrors, I like that they have this new kind of bunker, or Supergirl finally has her own bunker. And then especially how each hero has their own emergency phone line. And I feel like that was like maybe my favorite part of the tower, because it's one, smart to have an emergency phone line for all the heroes. And then two, it insinuates that they might actually use those phones to call people and prompt like a lot more mini crossovers and interconnectedness within the universe, which is great and which is what I've wanted for like ever. So the fact that those phones exist is a really big deal for me. The Wynn plot had a couple of like holes in it, which I'll talk about in the dislikes, but it was just good in general to have Wynn back. Danvers shot group hug and the Papa Bear hug were both, like, really, really adorable. Especially Kara being, oh, yeah, Kara and Wynn talking about being a dad. And then, I guess, finally, like, Kara just being extra fussy over William. And William being, like, simultaneously, like, self-righteous about his journalism and then ridiculously, like, oblivious to the power dynamics of going against Lex and all the danger around him. I thought that was, like, really kind of amusing, not gonna lie, even though, you know, we all know it's coming. Kara and William is coming. But yeah, it was kind of amusing in this episode, and they go on a date next episode, so we'll see how that progresses. Brad Brainy, his aesthetic is kind of sexy. I like the all-black look. Yeah, that's it. That's all I have to say about Brainy.
I like the DEO is dark and full of terrors. Yeah, I mean, I agree with a lot of that. I really liked, I think it's really good to see old characters in, like, a new world. And for us, for a long time, Wynn didn't really have much going for him, and then it picked up, and then he had to leave. But I feel like this time when we saw him, he really was a sight for sore eyes. Like, you're like, oh, Wynn, it's so great to see you. Just like all the other characters were happy to see him. And you can tell, like, he's still the old Wynn, but he's very much a new, more mature version of himself. And I love that he's still part of the Legion, and that he has, like, his own ring, basically, to give him powers versus everybody else who already has powers in the group. I love the Hall of Justice shout out. That was great. So this post-crisis world is already laying down, like, a bunch of stuff that we already love, and I think it's been going really well. I also love Nia's development. I think that she has been sidelined a lot throughout this season in particular because of, I don't know if it's because of Brainy and her and Brainy's relationship, or that the writers just didn't have much for her in the last few episodes before Crisis. But now hopefully it seems like it's going to pick up, and we really kind of got to see her perspective of things, because for the last few episodes, it's been Brainy's perspective on the relationship. Like, we haven't really gotten insight into what she thinks and feels about what's going on. So I really felt like now that they're post breakup, you can tell, like, she's really upset about it, but I like that everybody else picks up, like, the girls try to make her feel better, and then Wynn tries to make her feel better. So she's sort of coming into her own outside of just being, like, a reporter that we barely ever see doing her job, to someone who is really powerful as Dreamer. So I'm really excited to see where that goes. And when it comes to Brainy, I really like that I didn't like that he was working with Lex, but I like the fact that throughout his time working with Lex, like, all the deception that he was doing and the lies, you could tell how much it hurt him because of Jesse Rath's very expressive face. Like, every time he was doing something, he knew that he would either be caught, or, like, people picked up on his weirdness because it hurt him to do these things to his friends. So I really like that aspect, that he wasn't just, like, becoming this cold-blooded type of person, but that everyone kind of picked up on what it was that he was doing, or that it's a little bit shady. So hopefully that'll, like, lead to something. I'm really just enjoying the overall feel of this season, this part of the season, where it's just, everything is a little bit more mature. Everything is better. Like, the characters are they all have their little things to do right now. And there's, like, more layers for me watching these last couple of episodes post-crisis. So I really love that you have, like, the old with the new, and it really feels that way.
I definitely agree with this. And I really enjoyed, in general, seeing, like, the friendship interactions this episode. It really felt like these were group of people that really care about each other, not just, like, Alex and Kara being so excited to see Wynn. And then, you know, even with Wynn fangirling over Nia, you get to see, like Jess was saying, his friendship with Nora, even though we don't actually meet Nora. And also, you know, him being supportive of Brainy when Brainy, like, just, like, broke down. And then Brainy's like, I can tell you. I'll tell you all about this. And then, you know, Wynn's like, I'm kind of mad, but I'm also kind of, like, I understand what's happening and I want to help you. So it was, like, really nice to see that. Plus, the girls' night at the beginning, where, like you said, May, all the girls know that Nia's not okay. But then even though she says she is. And then at the end, we have the whole group, you know, the whole group game night, where even when they, like, brought William in to, like, be a new friend, and everyone's, like, sort of, like, getting along and calling back to how Mia was not okay before, but now maybe she is, et cetera. All that stuff, like, it's just really nice and believable, right? It doesn't feel like these people are just stuck in a room together because
they're
they
not
work together.
Employee friends. They're not, like, work friends. They're, exactly. They are, like, actually, like, friend.
Shady.
Some people claim that they're family. Some people claim they're, oh, we're family, but Supergirl actually it does feel like the actual family.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, that is Shaded Flash.
Speaking of, you know, William, I did enjoy, like, although, like, you know, my galaxy brain didn't enjoy it because it knew that this meant that we're going down the romance path,
right,
which was confirmed by the promo. And but that's more so like the reaction of fandom. Like, I don't personally care at this point because it's been so long since Kara got laid that why the hell not? But in the scenes themselves, like, I did enjoy the dynamic. I enjoy Kara to have more knowledge than, you know, this dude, right? And to be, like, protecting him. Well, he thinks he's doing the protecting, or he thinks he's doing, like, the investigating and the whatever, and right. She already knows everything, right? And she's already the one, like, trying to, like, worry about his safety. So I think it's cute. I enjoyed that. And aside from that, I really loved, like Jessica already, you know, the ode to Nia and all. It was wonderful. It's great that we're actually getting to see Nia needing to process this breakup and how it makes her, like it does make her feel like she wasn't good enough, right? Like there's something wrong with her that Brandy didn't. So, like, that's what I'm, you know, I'm, like, waiting for this.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that's
a good point. That's a good point, too, because it's, like, he broke up with her once he became his, like, full self, so it's just, like,
right.
Wait a minute. Yeah.
His true self didn't like her. So yeah, and so it was even, like, heartbreaking, like, when she had, like, she was trying to, like, access the dream, and instead she sees, like, Brainy, I don't remember, he was turning into a lion or a bear or a tiger or something.
Tiger.
I don't remember. He turned into, yeah, a tiger. Lions and tigers and bears are mine. So he, and, like, you know, because it's like, it is, like, messing with her psyche. It's messing with her abilities because she's doubting herself. So thanks a lot, Brainy. So yeah, so it was really nice to see Wynn talking to her, giving her a pep talk from the future. And also, it was kind of interesting how there is no concern with telling her things about Nora, right? About her descendant or whatever. So I was like, I wonder what, you know, what that means for the timeline, that, like, it's, you know, don't worry, like, it's not even, like, a question, right? So I don't know. I guess we're just operating in, like, this will happen eventually, don't worry about it. Instead of where they usually are, like, no, we can't talk about the future. So, cool.
Well, I guess, I mean, like, because he didn't really say much of anything other than that she exists, and
her name,
you know,
Nora.
Yeah, so, like, your line will continue to go on. That's pretty much an easy guess.
So yeah, I think that Jeremy did a good job of playing both his selves, so, you know, it's no Jesse Rath playing, like, 10 of himself, but it's so good. So it was interesting to see, like, a Toyman that could have gone down that path if he had not, you know, had all the circumstances he had on our Earth. So that was interesting. Meanwhile, I was intrigued by that, like, you know, this team up of Brainy and Lex and Lena, where no one really trusts each other, right? No one, but they're like, okay, we're in it for this larger purpose, this Leviathan purpose. And also, like, I'm hoping this will take us down the Lena and Brainy full-time team-up versus Lex. But for now, it was interesting to watch them all, like, sort of, like, play their part, but then also sort of still be playing each other or holding their cards close to their vest, except chest, vest, whatever, etc. And while this is going to be my dislike, I will say that it did spark joy to see Andrea and Lena interacting again, and to see how much Lena, like, Andrea wanted Lena to, you know, forgive her and to, like, be her friend again. It also had, you know, called many questions to mind. Like, I'm like, is Russell okay in this world? Because Leviathan hasn't contacted her, right? So Russell has no reason to be dead. His name is Russell, right? So anyway,
yeah, I think so.
Plus, that's right, plus in this world, you know, William is out to get the Luthers and doesn't really care about Andrea one way or the other. So just come back, Russell, be okay. So anyway, I officially ship Lena and Andrea, even though things are disliked. Okay. Also glad that Kelly and, you know, and Alex are doing good, even if they don't get any screen time. What did we, speaking of, what did not spark joy?
Kelly and Alex not getting any screen time. Yeah. I mean, I have questions. Namely, like, how did Evil Wind figure out that he was on an Earth that was not his Earth? And, like, why did that not freak him out? And then, like, when we picked up Wind, he was on a jail bus. So, like, what exactly the fuck was he doing to land there in the first place on this Earth that is not his Earth that he somehow knows about? So that was, like, you know, plot holes and, yeah. And then, like, the whole, like, the entire convoluted plot to Evil Toy Man to lure Wind back from the future was also that Lex could find out about Leviathan, an organization that has apparently not been doing shit in this new reality, and an organization that everybody knew about but him. And so, like, Lex is, like, outside the club right now trying to get in. Like, no one will give him the passcode to get into the club. And so it just, like, looks like Lex looks kind of pathetic in the sense of him being so, like, paranoid about, like, Leviathan, and he's only this paranoid because he didn't know about it in the first place. And, like, even that, like, the fact that he has such a complex about Leviathan and him not knowing about it makes it even that much worse that Leviathan isn't actually doing anything. So, yeah, it's like he's paranoid about an organization that is supposed to be big. We're supposed to be scared of Leviathan, but Leviathan didn't really do anything in the first half. They're not even active right now, so it's kind of, why are we going jumping through all these hoops? It kind of makes brainies, you know, I have to break bad to save the universe also kind of not make sense. And even though, like, he looks great, Brainy's aesthetic looks great, the fact that his first plan in working with Lex is this one, this whole convoluted bring Wind back plan to get the ship. And then the fact that they managed to fuck it up, like, Brainy gets flagged by a camera, and he almost loses the ship because Alex doesn't want to store it at the DEO, and he's like, my simulations didn't account for this. And I just have to wonder, like, is this really his, like, full intellect? Because I feel like there were some really amateur-ass mistakes that he shouldn't have been making as, like, a full himself connected to the big brain. So it also, not only did it make Lex look pathetic, it made Brainy look bad, like, worse without his inhibitors when it should be the opposite. Picking up on your Andrea and Lena conversation, yes, it was really great to see them kind of, like, interacting again, but, like, what makes it kind of, like, sours it is the fact that Lena is just lying through her teeth and, like, laying it on heavy, which I don't really understand her thought process at the moment, because, like, Andrea is a version that does not know in the past that, you know, what happened in the previous Earth. So, like, all of the emotions coming from Andrea are, like, 100% real, and I don't understand why that doesn't have any kind of impact on Lena at all. I didn't really like that.
To follow up on what you said about Lena and Andrea, I feel like, well, first of all, I'm really annoyed because for Lena to go to Andrea and get all that information from her, it's, like, really emotionally manipulative. Like you said, Andrea's, like, emotions were actually real and she felt that, but there was no reaction from Lena. And I feel like she goes on so much about people betraying her, but she's just doing the same thing to her, you know, former friends now in her head. She hasn't told them that they're no longer friends, but they are not. So I feel like it's just, again, hypocritical. And what really bugs me about the whole Lena situation is, you know, I would buy her more as a reluctant villain if we got to see more of the nuance behind her own emotions, because for her,
she's
it's
not
just
reluctant at all.
Yeah, well, yeah, yeah, but she's also not like, she's also not emotional about anything. It's just like constant anger. Like, she's turning into like the Mia type. Like, I just feel one thing all the time, bitterness and anger, and there's no sense of like sympathy or empathy with her about anything. And it's just weird, like, how can you say that you want to help humanity when you're not even connected to them on an emotional level whatsoever?
Right.
So it's just really bizarre to me that they're not playing into like even any guilt or shred of like a moment, even when it's not in front of other people, about maybe feeling bad about doing this to them. But then she'll be like, okay, well, they did this to me, so we can carry on. Like, there's no break in her, in the wall that she's put up. And it's just really concerning, because that would help us see a little bit more of her humanity throughout these episodes. I also did not like the lack of Kelly, because I feel like she's been really missing post-crisis. She hasn't really gotten much to do. She hasn't popped up except for like group scenes. And I would really, I want to hope that there's more of her coming, and that she has some kind of storyline that she's going to get into sooner rather than later. I didn't hate it, but like, of all the people to come to talk to Brainy, I feel like, since especially Alex hinted with her face that like she realized something was weird with Brainy, like he was acting strange, I was a little bit upset that nobody else came to talk to him about what he was going through or whatever, because it was Wynn who came to him later on and spoke to him. So I feel like Brainy's gonna crack, and I really want someone to notice, and yeah. No one in his immediate circle of friends really talked to him about it.
But I feel like, what would they have to, like, if he's acting strange, then
yeah,
I don't know that it was enough for Alex to be like, there's something like really, really wrong with you.
Yeah.
And then I guess, like, just with, if it's like breakup stuff, like, you broke up with Mia, so
yeah, that's true. That's
yeah, exactly. Mia got them in the divorce,
right? It's like, protect Mia. So. Like, okay,
but also I think that they just, like, I guess that they thought it was like a reaction to him finding himself, right? They're like, well, he's being logical now. Awkward yeah. times.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. But in terms of like the Lex and Leviathan thing, I still don't buy Leviathan as this great big bad that they're trying to sell us on, because it's like, now Lex wants to take them out, but they're not really around either, and we don't know anything about them at this point post-crisis, like what their plans were, where they're popping up, what they're doing. So it just feels like Lex is just fighting this invisible thing that no one really cares about, because we barely see them. So I would like to see more of that stuff, rather than just having him plotting and planning without anything to go on, really. It just seems like so egotistical of him to just be like, I'm the true villain, like, these, I need to get these people out of the way or take their power or whatever the hell he plans to do. And it's just like exhausting to watch. That is all.
As for me, I, you know, to take it back to Lena and Andrea, I completely agree with y'all that it's hypocritical the way that Lena is behaving. She's doing to Andrea exactly what she accuses Kara of having done to her. And like you said, like, the, even if she has a vendetta about what happened, what went down with Andrea before, like, this Andrea didn't do that. And also, things turned out real shitty for Andrea before. So, you got Russell killed. I'm not over this, Lena. So... Anyway, so I don't know why she has to like hold it against her, and also I don't know why it had to be like a narrative point that it's like hurting Andrea. Like, she could have of her own free will gone to Andrea and been like, let me know if Leviathan comes, because I know that they're dangerous and I want to, you know, whatever, you know, stop them, and not have it be like a double dealing with Lex or whatever. So I guess like they first framed it that way when they didn't have to at all. Just mm-hmm. so that I could be mad at Lena, I guess. So anyway, so yeah, I was not a fan of that. I was also the reasoning felt kind of flimsy, you know, with the extra win. Like, oh, we had to get this win and in order to bring the other win so we could then steal the whatever thing from win. Like, it was all just kind of like a, I don't know, not that exciting reasoning, and also it just didn't seem like this would actually mess things up. Like, couldn't Supergirl just say, yes, this was win from another Earth, not our win. Okay, moving on. Like, why would the Time Police come to him millennia or a century later and be like, you did this thing, didn't you? And then take him away. I don't know. I just don't believe it. This sounds fake. Like, why don't the Time Police have better technology to be like, oh, yes, you're right, we do detect Earth 62 for or formerly the speck of dust formerly known as Earth 62 is is on that person and not on you.
Well, so, I will whatever. Say, like, in to defense mm-hmm. of that, when there's this whole like big centuries long gap in history between us and whatever century.
Oh, that's right. They have you're right. They have. Yeah. They don't know some stuff. So maybe they didn't yeah. see the part. When Kara, but they did see the part where this happened. Just not the part where Supergirl said, never mind. Don't persecute this man.
I would think the Time Police too would have record of crisis because they're the Time Police.
Well, you know, who knows? I don't know. Overall, that plot was just silly. Like, it was just there. Yeah. I mean, the fact that Brady like confessed it all to Win in the same episode just shows how. It was just an excuse to get Jeremy Jordan back. There was no way we actually needed it to happen. Which is fine. I'm not complaining about Jeremy Jordan being back. So, great. I feel like the nice setup for William and Kara in this episode was, like, obliterated by the promo being like, we're going on a date! Hate that. I don't know why they have to move that. Like, this is, like, literally the first step they've taken since the moment when William was, like, inordinately concerned about Kara getting hurt in the episode where he confessed to her what was going on, because we had not previously seen his feelings, and then suddenly he was like, no, I just care about you so much, Kara. So, so, like, and after that, it was like they forgot about it, and now they're like, oh, we remember. Full speed ahead. So I'm not a fan of that. I wish that they would continue with a slow build. Continue with a slow build. Ha ha. I wish they would just have a slow build, period. So, oh well. And yes, lack of Kelly and Alex, or just really lack of Kelly, but both in her relationship with Alex and out of it. So yeah, I think that is that on that for me. I didn't have an issue with Wynn being the one that went to Brainy for the reasons I previously mentioned, but I do want to see more of I like the friendship we got in this, but I hope that we get to see them spread out, right, for everyone. So more people will hopefully talk to Brainy about how lame it is that he's being himself. Not being himself. But, you know, they think that he's being himself. So, do we have any predictions?
It's not really a prediction as much as it is an observation. That I don't know if like they're trying to build William and Kara as like DCTV's like Wonder Trevor in a sense, and I know like don't hate me people, but like because that just kind of like puts them on a level that's not that serious, but he does have this whole like gentleman in distress kind of thing going on, and is like someone that has his own kind of sense of like moral justice but still has to get saved by his lady every now and again, which I don't know if that's what they're trying to do for them and if it works or doesn't work. If you talk to the Supergirl fandom, they're like, nope, no, thank you.
Yeah.
But we'll I guess we'll see how this date goes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It could be like a, you know, non-starter, right? It could just wind up with Kara being like, no, I don't want to after all. Kind of like Kara and James did. So
true.
I just want to see Kara with someone, anyone at this point. Just give her something. That's why I'm like willing to see
let
where
her
it goes.
Get laid. Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely willing to see where it goes, but the, you know, seeing all the comments underneath any post relating to them is gonna be.
Any other actual predictions? No.
Right. Well, I think that I. Oh my goodness. Okay, I don't know. You almost sold me on it just with the Wonder Trevor idea. now I'm thinking about it. Yes, gentlemen, dude in distress. But no, aside from that, I'm still gonna bank on Lena and Brainy eventually teaming up. I don't know what Wynn's gonna do for another episode. You know, like why is there part two?
They like solved it. We thought.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it I guess felt like a one episode thing.
Yeah. So I don't know what what's with part two, but I'm guessing that there will be a complication just as Wynn is leaving, right? It's like, no, you can't leave because
you can't like get home. Oh, you can't get home because of the cube thingy.
There you go. Maybe
it's cube.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is. So
the brain
I'm
will
sure
get
that there's
found
like, literally a description. Yeah. Oh, there you go. Then that's when they'll have the friendship talk. That's when they'll have the intervention.
There you go.
It'll all work out. It'll all work out. And that's on the 16th of February.
Yes.
It does.
Will not
it says,
see Supergirl or Batwoman for 2 weeks.
Right. It says, Brainy must choose between Alex and Lex. Supergirl helps Wynn face his greatest fear. After Alex sets out to find evidence against Lex, Brainy must decide between helping his friend or continuing secretly working for Lex. So perhaps if Wynn can't get home and someone suspects Lex, and then he's like, must I? I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, that sounds about right. So now you know what happens next week on Supergirl.
You don't need to, well, yeah, or 2 weeks, but you won't even have to watch it because we told you. All right. Now we will move on to feedback. So Supergirl feedback, we have
Shang and Celeste. So Shang says, hey there, lovely ladies. Supergirl feedback, I think it's safe to say the current fandom outrage at the show is a culmination of many things. It's not just shippers crying because they didn't get their way. No one was saying anything about David's directing, so I'm not too sure what he was so worked up about. I feel like I don't think it was anyone was talking about his directing, but I feel like maybe from, if I'm trying to remember like what I saw of like his tweets, but people were saying that he was liking certain things about Supercore not happening or something. I feel like it was probably off of a continuation of like Staz trying to like stand up for himself.
He liked a tweet that said, I love a certain fandom being trolled. They can dish it out, but they can't take it. Great job with directing the episode, David. So he obviously was feeling snarky about a certain thing.
Yeah. Probably the Staz thing. So that's probably what he was so worked up about. Anyway, continuing on with Shang, says nothing more mature than using someone's actual death to whine about fans not liking something that wasn't directed at your work and taking the opportunity to prop up homophobes kissing your ass. So obviously David did a lot more than just like one tweet. So
no, there are definitely like he definitely liked several tweets. That was just the first tweet though.
Yeah. Oh, I remember because he quote tweet. This was after Kobe's death, and so he was tweeting like a quote from Kobe that also kind of like was like an indirect at fandom. So yeah, I can see how fandom can get like riled up about that. Yeah. Shang says, I don't understand why they constantly pick on the LGBT ship community and act as though we're being ridiculous and delusional and keep throwing it in our faces that it's fake, as though they don't know that they use that exact attachment to rake in viewers from the very community they insult. If you say there was never anything there in the first place, that's between the writing, performances, and marketing simply not true. Anyways, the argument about Supergirl already having queer rep, I'm clearly winning with Danson having zero screen time, Alex being sidelined as a director, Kelly having no lines, and Nia disappearing all the time, erasing one of the earliest lesbian canon couples, Isla and Violet. Oh, I forgot to mention that, because that's something I did see a lot of people talking about.
I was going to put that in my negatives, too. I just forgot her name. That's why I didn't.
erasing one of the earliest lesbian canon couples, Isla and Violet from the Legion in the comics, but making her married to Gwen on TV is not good. At this rate, it's on purpose. Is this really the fantastic hill the writers think I want to die on? I'm tired. So that was like, thank you, Shane, for a lot more detail and background on that, because I do think that that's like a really good point. And especially like the Isla thing, and then, you know, having queer rep on the show, but then not really showing it, it's kind of like goes back to that whole like diversity cookies. So yeah, Supergirl definitely needs to do better on that front. So thank you, Shane, for your Supergirl feedback. Celeste says, for Supergirl, honestly, I love this episode. Personally, I love Wynn's return. His scenes with Kara and Alex were amazing, and I forgot how much I missed their chaotic sibling-like relationship until I had it again. Especially love the Nia and Wynn scene. I think the way that they dropped some crumbs about Nora was nice. Nia finally getting that boost of confidence after being in a slump about her and Brainy's breakup was good. She needed that. I feel like the Dream Dog's angst would have hit better if I felt like it was earned, but it wasn't, in my opinion, and their breakup last week was kind of annoying, given that they barely had much development. But anyways, it was well-acted, and I liked it, but I feel like I would have loved it if they had actually had screen time prior to this angst. Being a Kelly stan is so hard nowadays because she's had, like, 2 minutes of screen time. And lastly, this whole William Carr thing, she's feeling meh about it. On the one hand, I don't particularly like that they're going in this direction with barely any development. On the other hand, I know Supergirl sucks at riding ships, and the fact that Kara's been single since season 3 makes me want her to finally have a romantic life again. Barry was married by season 4 and Oliver by season 6, and before then, they both had solid in-game love interests, and I feel like Kara deserves that with someone, so I guess we'll see how this goes. Oh, then she also, which I'm kind of wondering this too, she said there's this argument that William treated her terribly, but technically wasn't that all erased when the new timeline was created? Plus, Lena isn't being too nice to Kara either, so I don't know. But to me, if Kara's happy, then I'm happy, even if the writing doesn't make sense sometimes. Which, is William, I feel like they should elaborate on that more in the upcoming episodes. Maybe by showing Russell is alive.
Yes! Please show Russell is alive. I very, very, very much want to be okay. But yeah. As for, you know, Shang's elaboration on what happened with David Harewood, I'm, like, going through the tweets now, and I definitely think that using Kobe was unnecessary. And yeah. Also, I think that there is a lack of nuance on, probably on both sides. Because, you know, when you are getting, even if it's not criticism directed specifically at your part of the project, it feels like it's attacking you, right? Like, you feel like when people boo after you did something, it feels like they're booing you. So he got defensive about it, but he should also be able to understand, you know, what it is that, where they're coming from, because this has been going on for years now. We've been having this discussion between fandom and creators, and I see that Jessica Queller responded to his tweet with amen. So clearly she's fully on board with what he's saying. And she, you know, doesn't, like, it's hitting, basically it's like talking to a brick wall, right? They don't understand what is being said to them. They don't understand the nuance of what's being said to them, and they don't care to, because they think that it's all just, like, it's all just negativity.
Shippers being right? Shippers. Yeah.
Exactly. And not understanding what the real implications are and why people are feeling this way. So I don't know. Like, I wish I had a solution for that. You know, I don't, but it's just basically just, If you want to get through to them, then just always trying new ways of bringing across your argument, right? I don't know how many times we try to reframe the sentence, give Iris a voice, let Iris do her job or whatever, you know, eventually. I don't know what could be done, but I totally agree. Like, I didn't know about Isla and Violet and when, because I don't know much about Legion of Superheroes, but I remember as I was watching on my timeline, I saw someone be like, I can't believe they just did that with Wynn's wife.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, obviously, Wynn's wife.
His wife could have been anyone. Like, you didn't even have to be, you know, like, so that's just like, it does feel intentional.
His wife could have been Nora, because the entire time we saw around Nora. But oh well. Yeah. But yeah, it does feel intentional. And not that, yeah, I don't know. Like, it's like they think that they've checked the box because they had Alex and Kelly, but they're not even giving Alex and Kelly anything.
And they're not even doing Mia. Even though
exactly. I was about to say, you know, the Nia thing, that I've had an issue with how they wrote Nia and Brainy precisely for that. So yeah, I wish that they could look inwards as well. Because yes, I do think that, you know, many people saying the same negative thing is gonna cause a shutdown to the other person, but they also need to open their hearts, if they're not opening their ears, to to actually understand what's being said. Moving on, we've got Batwoman, an unbirthday present. On the Kane sisters' birthday, Kate and Alice contend with demons from the past, and an unexpected guest makes a surprise appearance in Gotham. I feel like that unexpected guest is just Beth. And so Alice basically tells Sophie her life story, and Beth tells Kate hers, and Sophie and Kate both feel awkward. So, what did we like about this episode? What sparked joy?
I actually really like this episode. I think that it got a lot of interesting dynamics out of it, specifically because we have Beth now and she's so new, and we don't really know much about anything, but we got to really explore who this person is. Outside of just like being Alice, we know the Beth as Alice. We've never really met Beth. And I feel like this really gave us a chance to meet her. And she got so many different and fascinating scenes with so many of the characters. Like, I really love the fact that she got to chat with Mary as they were prepping her to become Alice. It was a really nice, tender moment because Beth is an actual good person. So she felt like semi-responsible for what happened with Mary's mom, and then she apologized even though it wasn't her fault. But I feel like they really connected on a different level, and Mary was getting, like, she continues getting a lot of support from like Sophie and Beth, which means like the writers are interested in exploring those dynamics. And I think that this conversation in particular really helped Mary feel less jealous of another version of Kate's sister, because they got to have that moment, because we've seen Mary sort of be like a fish out of water. She doesn't really know her place with Beth or with Kate, and like where she stands as a sister. Like, do you love me as a sister? Are you more concerned with Alice? So there was like that push pull there and all that jealousy. And I feel like now that she got to get to know a version of Beth who was not Alice, she really got to explore who that person was and sort of figure out her place with the whole Alice Kate dynamic. Like, she gets a sister that isn't purely evil. So that was really nice to see. And I really love that, I think it was this episode, Sophie got to go visit Jacob in prison. She's still clearly one of his favorite daughters, more so than Kate, who has not seen her dad. And I like that that continues to grow her, and that she got a lot to do with like Alice's investigation, or her interrogation rather, and that she got to have that moment with Kate as well. Like, they still had the little code. There's still hints of Batmore in there as well. And she continues to be a major part of the plot. And I also really like that Alice actually picked up on the fact that, like, she kept dropping hints that maybe Sophie is, like, really uncomfortable being in the closet. Like, once she is truly herself, she can be free. Like, Alice thinks she's free. So I love that that conversation was like had a double meaning for Sophie. And I also really liked that we got to see Kate's inner turmoil over having rescued Beth on another Earth, or realizing that Beth didn't have to be Alice, my God, because Kate saved her on another Earth. So she feels like really guilty about that. But we got to see like some of that introspection, and the fact that she still feels bad because maybe Alice is her fault, but not really. Like, you can't prevent these things. But at the same time, she's getting like a second chance with this version of Beth. So that was really great to explore. And I really like that Beth, despite being on this new Earth for her, like for a day, she's like, oh, you guys have all these problems and I want to help solve them. So I'm going to brave all and dress up as Alice and go out there with this madman whom I don't know. So, and the suspense was like really intense in this episode, because like even in one 42 minute episode, we got to know Beth, and I was really fearing for her life when she was in that car, because she could have completely died, because she is a doppelganger at this point. Like, anything could happen. She doesn't have to necessarily be around. So it would have been cruel to have taken her away, but I'm glad that they didn't. But it was a really suspenseful episode throughout.
Yeah, like, that was probably my favorite thing that, about this episode, is that Beth survived. Like, she's still alive. Love that for me. And I did also really like that we got the sister dynamics that I was looking forward to seeing between Mary Beth and Kate. Oh. Wait. like the old twin, but it's like Mary Beth and... Anyways, sorry. Coming back to the topic at hand. Kate going to see Sophie immediately when she, like, was like, why did you let her go? And, like, Sophie, like, pointing her to Mary, like, you're not the only person that's seeing double of your sister. I like that conversation because Sophie believed Mary, and I like that Mary was, like, vindicated in seeing Beth and was proven that she hadn't lost her mind. So all of that was great. I like that Mary helped Beth get into character as Alice, and that she didn't judge Beth, because I feel like that'd be really hard for her, especially since Alice killed her mom, for her to be doing anything for someone that looks like Alice, even if they are from another Earth and have not a bad bone in their body. So I really like that conversation between Mary and Beth, and I feel like it did a lot to help Mary feel like she could, you know, belonged as one of the Kane sisters, or Kane Hamilton sisters. And, you know, like, at the end, that kind of, like, went into, like, making a birthday party for both her and Kate, for Beth and Kate. So I really like that dynamic. I like that for Beth, for this Beth. Kate was her hero, and her main motivation for pretending to be Alice was to repay the favor and save her sister. And, again, we have to mention, like, I am so happy that Beth did not die, because she came really close in that car, and I was so scared. And I was like, please, Kate, don't just, like, don't have to be, like, you looking forlornly as, like, the fire's around and you can't save her again. Like, don't do that to me. So I really like that Kate was able to save her, and I feel like it was also great for Kate to have a second chance at saving her sister, since that's something that she really felt guilty about, knowing that Beth's Kate was able to save her while she wasn't able to save Alice. So it was like a second chance for Kate also in that moment. It's another car, another death that's about to happen. But this time, Kate did react, and Kate did save her sister before the car blew up. So I really liked that for her. The Sophie and Alice scenes were also really nice to see that dynamic, because I think it's the first time that they've really interacted. They both seem to kind of hold back with each other at times because, you know, they recognize how important the other is to Kate. So there's this kind of, like, interesting dance between them. Sophie seemed to connect to Alice a little bit, despite, like, Jacob warning her not to. It's kind of hard not to let Alice get into your head when you hear about all that she went through, the kind of path that she was forced down in her life. And I feel like Alice weirdly seemed to care a lot about Sophie needing to be her true authentic self and getting out of the closet. I was like, and then she also, like, avoided killing Sophie when she could have, which just adds more weight to the Kofi endgame, or Batmore, whatever you want to call it. Yeah. Like, even your psychotic sistership to Kate. What are you waiting for? I do wonder, like, how does Alice know so much about Kate and Sophie and their relationship, or the fact that Sophie's in the closet, if she was never around to see any of their relationship? Plot holes, but I just won't think too deeply about them at the moment because they're working in my favor anyway, so I don't care. But I liked how Sophie and Alice's stuff was also, like, low-key to support Sophie and Kate's endgame status or OTP status on the show. And I also like that in this back half, like, once you lost the weight of bland white man whose name I cannot remember that was holding Sophie down, I feel like we're getting a lot more introspection on Sophie's feelings about being in the closet and a lot more characters are pointing it out or pushing for her to like think about it and do something about it or figure out how she feels about it. So I think all that's good stuff.
Bless. I also really liked this episode. I think Batwoman has been just creatively improving every week for the last few. I don't know. So I really liked how they incorporated Beth into this world and how they had her, you know, because before I was asking, like, how is this woman not going to know that she's on a different Earth? Like, how does she not realize that no one knows who she is? So I liked the revelation that she was basically just trying to hold it together, knowing that she was just, like, a non-entity. Like, no one knows who she is or where she's coming from, which is why she came to Kate. And then Kate attacked her. And then she's like, okay, well, this is really messed up. So I really enjoyed that. And I loved, you know, just how I loved like sort of like the adulation that Beth had for Kate because of her Kate and the debt that she owes her. And also the guilt, you know, that Kate was feeling towards Beth because of how things turned out for her Beth. And then a little bit of jealousy and also like skittishness from Mary. And once again, Nicole Kang did an amazing job between first kind of being jealous, though now there's another sister and this time it's the good sister. And now I don't even get to be the good sister. So who am I? And then also, like, you are literally the person, like, you look like the person that killed my mom. Like, just watch, you know, I just watched my mom die. And now here you are needing my help. So I thought that all three of those, like, angles of that sisterly triangle played out really nicely. And it was totally believable to me that over the course of that one episode, they're, like, celebrating the birthday together at the end, which was super sweet. Just having that conversation between Mary and Beth, where Beth was really, you know, like, kind about the situation, like, understanding of Mary's position. And then Mary felt, like, you know, safe enough with Beth and protective enough of her to try to help with the plan. And also the fact that Beth is badass enough to go in there and pretend to be Alice, right? So close. She just didn't know the right Wonderland quote. Who could have known? So yeah. Also, the tension was real. Like, because, like you mentioned, you know, Beth could have died. She is a spare. We have Alice. So I was, for a second, like, oh my god, am I going to watch Kate not save her sister again? Like, I was very concerned. But thankfully, for Kate and for myself, that did not occur. So yeah, good job with ramping up the tension. Yeah, so that whole plot line worked for me. I liked all of that. In the meantime, I also really liked the Sophie and Alice dynamic. The fact that, and the fact that we got to see, you know, the language that Kate and Sophie have, even though, like, it came from their training, but the fact that they're able to implement it so flawlessly and that Alice didn't even realize it was happening. And, of course, commented on how they have their own secret little language. Was all excellent shipping fodder for me, and that Sophie trusted Kate enough to follow through with that instead of to go off on her own and be like, because like when Jacob was like, do this thing, and Sophie's like, nah, I'm gonna do what I want. Then when Kate was like, do this thing, Sophie's like, well, Kate said to do that thing, I will do that thing, instead of being like, no, Kate is in danger, she is being whatever, I will, you know, do something. So I like that. I like that their minds melded, and that it you know, nearly worked until Alice escaped at the end. But like you said, I was thrilled that Alice did not try to, like, didn't even try to kill Sophie. Like, she knows that would be too far. She knows she can't justify that one to Kate. So that was good. Also loved that she kept comparing her literal closet with Sophie's metaphorical closet. I was like, okay, these situations are not the same, Alice. But I see what you are trying to do. So I am fully supportive of Alice being fully supportive. Maybe she's already planning on expanding her tea party to four. Maybe she's like, well, if I can get Sophie on board, then maybe Kate will definitely come along. So yeah, that was fun. What other things happened in this episode? Because I feel like I liked most of it. And I don't know, I've run out of things to say. Oh, you know what? I love that the moment where Mary figured out the whole multiverse.
That was beautiful. I forgot to mention, like, all the protesters. I did mention in my dislikes.
Yes! Oh my god, yes!
Like, the likes, all the protesters are like, turn on the fucking back signal and let's not do this whole she can't save people because she's a lesbian thing. Like, that's stupid. So I like that all of the protesters in Gotham, like, rallied around Kate in that moment. Yeah. That was cool.
And that, I also like that. It was really nice because a lot of times when you see, like, people protesting in these shows and movies, whatever, it's like, oh, they're protesting because the hero, something went wrong with the hero, right? And so they're like, oh, lock him up, or oh, you know, whatever. And this time they're, like, protesting for her. Like, they're like, we want more Batwoman! So I love that. That was really cool. And then she, like, showed up and everyone was cheering and I was like, ah!
Okay. Yeah.
So that was a feel-good moment.
Yeah. Good.
I definitely like that. I think I'm good on that. What were we not good with? What did not spark joy?
I'd say, like, the main thing for me was the whole, like, I don't understand yet the rules of all the doppelgangers who have merged into Earth Prime. Like, Beth is there, but we didn't really get to see her realize that, like, if she's there, what happened to her Kate? What happened to her dad? You know, like, what happens to these other people? Does she get to mourn them? Are they gone? You know, like, all of these questions I have about how all that works. And then while I loved that Mary figured out the multiverse, I really hated that Kate lied to her about it or, like, made her sort of feel crazy, because this was, like, the time to let her in, to bring her into the circle of trust, as it were. And I just feel like Kate's been revealing herself to, like, these randos. Why not reveal yourself to your own sister, someone you say that you trust, but yet you haven't opened up to anybody? Like, what have you learned from crisis, Kate? Tell people. And, like, it was right there. Mary had figured it out. Just tell her. So I did not like that.
She was also drunk, though. So
yeah, that's true. But I don't know. Yeah. And then the last thing is, like, Alice's moment of becoming Alice, like, I guess when she was a kid, like, that transformation was fine. But because they brought back the mouse's dad, it was just strange to me, because I still don't understand how he really factors into their adulthood or their plans. So it just feels like they're prolonging this backstory for Alice without really getting into the crux of, like, what they intend to do with Gotham. Everyone's going to be invited to the tea party, but we don't know what that is. And I feel like he could be an interesting character if he's, like, still alive. Like, does he still have influence over them? Then I could just kind of buy Alice's continued crazy, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
that's all.
Oh, it's my turn. Okay. Sorry. I think the biggest weak spot for me was the whole Alice's backstory, and not that it didn't play out interestingly enough, because I don't think, you know, it wasn't, like, badly acted or whatever, but I just feel it started out with so much mystery for me that the whole, like, I think when we first got her backstory, there was that scene in the cold open with young Beth, and she's, like, looking into, like, a tank or whatever, and sees, like, a face and, like, freaks out. That was super interesting to me, and it was, like, this whole, like, mystery. But now that we figured out, like, now that we know what happened, that we find out it wasn't, like, some giant cult or giant operation human trafficking thing, whatever, I just feel like a lot of the appeal behind her backstory just kind of, like, deflates a little bit. You know, I definitely get why, she and Mouse turned to the Alice in Wonderland and create this whole universe, complete with the Cheshire Cat that she got for her birthday in this episode, and the dad being the caterpillar because of how he looks like. And I really like Alice in Wonderland just in general, like, outside of the show, but I love Alice in Wonderland. And I liked, in the episode, all of, like, the references, how those characters in the book have come out into, like, real areas of Alice's life. But I don't understand, maybe not yet, how that transfers into adulthood especially now that they're free of his dad slash the caterpillar. I understand, like, as a kid, the making up this whole world and, you know, as an escape, but how does that translate into them being, like, adults? Like, once they were free, why are they still stuck in this kind of fantasy that they've already, that they've created for themselves? And I feel like both Alice and Mouse are a bit too sane to be crazy. Like, if that makes sense. Like, Alice is definitely crazy, but I feel like there's too much sanity and intention in their plans for it to be they just went off the deep end as kids and never came out of it. They definitely know the actions and the consequences of those actions. Alice is specifically zeroing in on Kate and the Kane family because she knows who they are and there's, like, intention there. So we can't really just brush things they do off as them just being like, oh, you know, they should be in Arkham Asylum because they're crazy. So, like, I don't know. Like, I feel like if it was, like, a cult or some kind of, like, giant organization, there's, like, this whole indoctrinization, then that would make sense why, even as adults, they can't break out of this story. But that's not really what happened. It was just, like, one dad wanting to, like, play plastic surgeon with his kid's face. So I'm not really sure how that, you know, translates into whatever they're trying to do with the city now as adults. This is more of like a minor nitpick, but like the whole parallel between Sophie and Kate having a secret language and Alice and Mouse having a secret language was just like weak sauce only because Alice and Mouse had the better secret language. Like Kate repeating, like, let Alice go twice and Sophie like revealing the whole like special ops training. I was like, duh. Like I would have picked up on that even before she said it, that Kate, why would you need to say that twice? You're acting weird. And I feel like Alice should have picked up on that too. But anybody, like, I feel like anybody could have picked up on that, you know, but only Alice would have been able to pick up on Mouse's code, which is why theirs works better. So that was kind of like minor, but I was just like, come on, let's give like a, can we, I don't know. Oh, I guess they only knew each other in the military, but it just seems like really, you know, weak that like they're the only two people in the military. So the only two people that know that you have to repeat something twice to do the opposite, you know? Whatever. And then I mentioned this, like the good part of it in the likes, but just like in my dislikes, the police commissioner would rather risk his son's death than ask a lesbian for help. Like, sir, come on. That was stupid. He is stupid. And the people of Gotham are right to protest.
I predicted last week that GCPD was shady, and I was right.
One for May. You go, May.
True.
Woohoo!
She now has a 100% track record of prediction. First prediction, she got it right. Just kidding. I pretty much agree with everything you're saying, although I wasn't as against, obviously, the saying things twice. I probably would not have figured it out because I wouldn't have thought about it. But Alice should have. You're right about that. I realized I didn't mention any of Alice's flashbacks in my likes, and I guess it's just because I didn't care about them. We already knew how stressful and, you know, horrible it was for her there, and yet I still don't feel like we understood. Like, they showed the turning point, but I don't know. I guess I don't feel like it was dramatic enough, like, in comparison to everything else she was suffering, for that to be the turning point. So I was just like, okay. Like, I was expecting it to lead up to, like, them killing the dad or something, you know? Like, the, like, really big change. But instead it was just like, well, and then that one day she was like, you know what? Fuck it, I'm going to be Alice, because I'm tired of this shit.
Well, they did kill her cat.
Yeah, exactly. They killed her cat, and she was like, the Cheshire Cat? No!
No!
At a time! So I was like, alright, sure. Obviously, it would be very, very upsetting if they killed your cat, but I still feel like it was just, like, so much time spent in telling those flashbacks, and I was like, we already had an episode with all these, with, like, have these flashbacks. I don't know if this was necessary for us. And yeah, like they also said, it doesn't explain where the dad went or, like, how he's connected. And like Jessica said, it's just not as interesting of a mystery as if she had been, like, found by a cult or, like, by some kind of, you know, people who, like, purposely indoctrinated her to be like this. And so just like this man just really needed her to sew his son's face together instead of finding fucking plastic surgery and cutting it up. Like, you obviously have money. I don't understand what is happening right now. And if you're like makeshift, you know, knitting of people's faces can produce such excellent results, then you obviously could have just gone the hospital route. But oh well. He wasn't that far gone, basically. His face was salvageable. Now it's probably not. But anyway, outside of that, I think that maybe I would... It's a little silly to me that Beth, like, comes from, like, had, like, astrophysics degree or whatever. She, like, wrote her thesis on this. So, like, of course she understands. Totally fine.
Right.
I'll explain to her. Especially when Mary could understand just by having one drink too many and be like, what if there's a multiverse? So I feel like...
Extra galactic stuff.
Yeah, exactly. It was like, all right, that was unnecessary. I feel like she still could have been like, I don't really get what's going on, but I'm going to go with it. Instead of like, ah, yes, my 200-page thesis from one of my 5 degrees told me this, so no worries. And then I totally agree with you, like, not just that, you know, GCPD captain, whatever, commissioner, whatever his name is just obviously, like, the worst to think, even think about picking homophobia over his son's life. But he's also, like, a bit, like, I feel like there could be a little more nuance with that, right? Like, even if it was just, like, he privately asks for that woman's help, and then still refuses to turn on, you know, the symbol as a gesture, so that people are protesting that she should get, like, that respect or whatever, I don't know, something else, than just, like, no, we don't need that woman's help, because she likes women, that's disgusting. So I was like, okay, I don't know, like, I guess that's, now that, you know, the world that we're living in, the country we're living in, maybe that would happen, but it just still feels like it was, like, okay. It's just,
and it's also like react, like, because wasn't like Slash or Slade or whatever the fuck his name was, Slam Bradley.
Slam.
She rejected one of her own, so we do not like her.
Yeah,
kind of like misogynistic police commissioner dude.
Yeah, for sure. So I feel like they could have gone a slightly more interesting route with that, even though I was very pleased with the final scene. And then finally, I need a Luke episode. Where's my Luke episode? Because I feel like Luke has just been there for, like, the last, like, 5 episodes. She's like, hey, what's up? I am here. And I really want him to be, you know, part of this. I want him to be in my sparking of joy. Because I really like Hammers Johnson. I think Luke has potential. But they've benched him. That's all. So, do we have predictions for future episodes?
Well, my prediction is kind of like it's continuation of my previously correct prediction, but like I think both Alice and Beth collapse at the end of this episode with a splitting headache, and so I can only imagine it's because both of them are not supposed to exist in the same time in the same universe, so like the universe is like trying to like correct it some kind of way. So I feel like if this headache doesn't kill one of them, Alice will definitely try to kill Beth first to make it stop. And so I wonder if, and this is like a big if, like if Beth survives the next episode or survives long enough, the season will end with Beth and Alice somehow fusing together, like the universe finally like fusing them together and correcting itself. And then maybe that's where we get like the split personality thing from the comics.
That is a great
prediction. That is a great
but this
prediction.
Is where this is the thing about doppelgangers that confuses me, because then it's like Supergirl has two wins from two different Earths.
Two different
but
times.
They're not, and two different times. Yeah, but they're not like experiencing headaches about it. So I feel like I want the Arrowverse to just figure it out.
Well, I feel like they're not experiencing. Well, I don't know. I don't, yeah, because I was going to say, like, because these two Beths are occupying the same space in the same, like, chronological time. Whereas Wynn is from the future. Like, this Wynn is from the future. And so there is no Wynn in, like, the present time. And so, like, Alt-Earth Wynn coming in and future Wynn, like, somehow that kind of, like, gap
I'll
explains
it.
Okay. Perhaps.
Perhaps.
I do not have any predictions.
Yeah. But I do agree that I could see them somehow having to merge. Even though I would love to see two, you know, like Aleph and Beth running around separately, I do think that them merging through whatever cosmic force would then continue to give us that the impetus of like Kate, like, you know, not really being able to get rid of Alice because Beth is there. After proving that Beth is not there, you know, with Alice, but now literally Beth is there. So, I don't know. I could definitely see that. Now, feedback for Batwoman. What do we have?
Celeste gave us some Batwoman feedback. She said it was another solid episode. I think the episode is starting to get better, especially compared to the pilot, which I totally agree. The Alice flashbacks were sad, but it was interesting to see what was her breaking point. Attention in the Alice Sophie scenes was chef's kiss. Megan and Rachel bounce off each other well. The way we're slowly seeing more of how Sophie's struggling with being in the closet is interesting, but I also want to give her a hug. She's going through it recently. Also, the little bat, Sophie Batmore, Celeste asked, is there an official ship name? I think you've heard that it's Batmore. I like Kofi. I think Kofi's cute, but
Kofi,
if we're going like, yeah, probably Batmore is more widely used. The scene of Sophie telling her happy birthday was cute. Finally, Kate getting to save doppelganger Beth was a nice way to wrap up and give Kate closure. Overall, solid episode. Can't wait for next week. Yes, you can, because you have to wait 2 more weeks. Sorry, Celeste, to find out what's going to happen. So thanks, Celeste, for your feedback.
Wonderful. Yep. Thank you, Celeste. You are our, you know, our joy, giving us several shows to munch on. So we now move on to side B. Oh, no, we don't. We move on to our Lady Succumption nominations of side A. Do we have any names to throw in the ring? Because I do.
Beth and Mia.
Yes. Beth and Mia. That's exactly correct. So no discussion needs to be had. All right, moving on. Side B. Proof of concept / fatal risks. We start off on the Arrow series finale. We start at the end. The Arrow series finale. Fade out. Stephen Amell signs off as the Green Arrow after 8 seasons and the launch of countless superheroes. The series wraps up the story of the Green Arrow and how all he had to do to solve everything he wanted was die. All he had to do was die. And we are so grateful to him for it. So, what sparked joy?
Okay. Well, I wanted to go into this. Well, I did go into this episode without a lot of expectations because I didn't really know how they were going to pull off a series finale with the, you know, lead character already dead, who had died twice already. So this was just like a prolonged mourning period. And that's exactly what this episode was. I mean, I really liked the scenes at like when Quinn unveiled Oliver's statue and everyone was holding the little lights and his speech about Oliver, because I feel like they came a long way from how they started. And he mentions that in his speech, like he hated Oliver, he hated what the Green Arrow stood for and all that. So I feel like it was really nice to see Quentin speak so kindly about Oliver and everything that he's done for the city. And I feel like that statue was the exact, like, it was a great example of everything he stood for, and even like the way that he was standing in the statue or whatever. That was really nice. I really loved the scene with Laurel and Quentin and how Laurel was so torn up about all of these people coming back from the dead, and she was sitting here the only one wondering why Earth One Laurel was not around.
I think, and that goes like to your Batwoman, like, why are the doppelgangers not the same? I think this is like the one kind of like lends to that Batwoman theory about the doppelgangers, because like Laurel Earth One Laurel can't exist because Laurel C was already there.
Yeah, that makes sense. But I really like that in general, like, Quentin made her, was the one to make her feel better, because she's like, oh, there's something, like, wrong with me. And he's like, there's nothing wrong with you. Like, you're basically perfect as you are, or whatever. So I really like that. We got that last father-daughter type of conversation between them, because we know that Sarah wasn't getting any screen time with her dad. So there's Laurel and her father. So that was great. And I really liked, actually, the scenes between Felicity and Mia, but particularly the fact that, like, Felicity came back, but she didn't want to rush talking to the adult Mia, because to her, she was still a baby. She was at home. She was teething. She didn't want to rush seeing her grow up, even if she, you know, she had that chance. So that was really nice. And I really liked the fact that it wasn't Felicity who started talking to her. It was Mia who came over and said hello. And that's how they, like, got to speaking to each other. So that was really, really sweet. What else did I like? I really liked the fact that the last three people in the bunker were Diggle, Dinah and Renee. Because I feel like, as much as this episode kind of honored OTA, because you had, like, the flashback scenes with Oliver and Diggle and their friendship, their blossoming friendship. And then you had, like, the finale scene, the final scene with Oliver and Felicity. And then you had, you know, NTA here, and they've made, like, a big impact on the show as well in the last few seasons. Like, a lot of the time they're the people that I would enjoy watching the most for a lot of the time. So it was nice to see them kind of, like, shut the lights and talk about what the future holds between them or for them in that moment, because they've really come such a long way and they've been really good friends to each other. And it was nice seeing them kind of that shot of their backs to overlooking the bunker was really great. Diggle's speech at Oliver's actual funeral was really nice. I like that it was really private, and, you know, he had a lot of great things to say about him, about Oliver being his brother and him being his, because I think that that is part of the core of this show. And I really like that they showcased that friendship throughout this episode, because it's been a really strong backbone. What else? Kara unexpectedly showing up. It was nice to be reminded that this was Earth Prime now, so other people did actually, like, exist here, so she can just pop in to say her farewell as well. And I also really liked the fact that, like, Felicity told Barry that she didn't really blame him for Oliver's death, even though he was there, because obviously it wasn't his fault, but it was nice to hear, because, you know, Barry has a guilt complex. Yeah, those were, like, the moments that really stood out and sort of made the episode feel more emotional than it actually was overall, but, like, those specific character moments were strong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you hit, like, all of the main ones. I feel like you didn't hit Roy and Thea, which I was...
Oh, yes, Roy and Thea.
How dare you?
I didn't. I'm so sorry, Tati. Forgive me.
Wow.
But yes, their dynamic was really good too. I really liked that Roy was actually apologizing, and he's, like, the only one who's like, yeah, in a post-crisis world, we can all die, but I want to live my life with you. And I think that his proposal was very sweet, like, the wording that he used. So, yay, that ship is sailing. I was happy.
And now you're done. Now you're actually done.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree with that. Like, I, like, I think it was, the a lot of the strengths of the episode came in those little like emotional character beats. I liked Mia and young William interacting. Even though I thought it was weird how Sarah wasn't involved in the episode as much as I thought she would be or assumed she would be, and her, like, coming to pick up Mia from the future to go to her dad's funeral just seemed, like, odd. But I like that Mia got to, again, it seemed like Mia was in, like, the middle of her own little crisis. So being able to save her brother here when she couldn't do it in the future was kind of like a pickup that she needed. And especially, like, the little after conversation with William, where she's showing him, like, all the different parts of the crossbow, which technically I think he should already know, since I'm pretty sure his dad told him that, but I don't know. But anyway, that conversation between them was really cute. And then also, like, Felicity watching them and trying to like process Mia from the future being here and also Mia the baby back at home waiting for her was really, really nice. And like Mia seeing like her mom and then them kind of like avoiding each other until like the very end. I thought like the scene at the funeral when Mia finally approaches Felicity and like Emily does this like kind of gasp thing, I thought it was really, really well acted in that scene, especially. Like, I think she did like a really good job of being like overwhelmed with seeing Mia since she was trying to like avoid it the whole episode. So I like that. I liked the conversation between Laurel and Quentin because I love how much Quentin loves Laurel, even though he knows it's not his Laurel. It is still his Laurel. And so I like that he loves her so much, even when she doesn't feel like she deserves it. So I really, really enjoy that relationship. I like that Thea and Emiko finally got to meet, and it seems like Emiko is like less crazy in this Earth Prime, so that's cool. They still get to be sisters. Of course, Thea and Roy ending on a good note, getting engaged was nice. trying to think of what else. How they were all kind of set up, setting it up for the future, and also the Canary show. So I feel like Dinah was going to be police commissioner, but then she decided to go somewhere else. And then we know in the future, she just kind of like dropped in the future with no recollection of what happened to her. So it feels like there's some setup there. You still have Renee set up to be the mayor. You have Diggle set up to move to Metropolis before he gets like hit with this box of like green neon energy that's obviously hinting towards something that we all know is hinting towards, but we can't say it because non-disclosure agreements, Guggenheim and Ramsey. But I feel like the setup for the characters and what they do after this was pretty good. Tommy and Laurel, you got like all your little favorite little connections. Yeah. I feel like I should have like the freshest memory because I just watched this episode before we started, and now I'm like, what else happened?
Well, close enough.
Close enough. Go ahead, Tati.
Okay. I thought it was a nice, you know, like send off for Oliver, like ode to Oliver. It was a good way of sort of giving like easing people into the fact that he is indeed gone, right? Because you do wonder, like, how are you gonna do a finale without the main guy already died? But it was nice to see how everything is turning out for people, how things move on even without Oliver. So, and it also ended on like a hopeful note because it was a clever way, although I have issues with it that we'll talk about later. It is a clever way to get back so many of the cast members. Instead of, you know, just doing essentially a clip show, which they had already done in the previous hour, they actually have people back on this new universe, right? And it makes sense because it isn't just like, oh, he revived Earth One people. It's like, oh, this is how he fit the universes back together. So they have different realities and they've had different experiences that then just form this new world. Which is why you have Earth 2 Laurel instead of Earth 1 Laurel. Again, I have issues with that. But I did love the scene that came out of it with Quentin and Laurel. I thought that was really well acted, beautiful, that touched on this relationship that was so impactful in the second half of the show. The scene with Laurel and Tommy was quite interesting. I don't know how I feel about the fact that Laurel and Tommy got married. I guess I'm happy. I'm happy for them. You know, we didn't get to see it, but it was like bittersweet. Yeah, exactly. I have questions. And it was bittersweet to see him talking, you know, to this Laurel and how, you know, and saying like, it's nice to see you basically. I was like, oh, okay. Sad. I love, love that I got my one major ship in Arrow Endgame. Tia and Roy. Don't know why they had him run off in the first place. It was totally unnecessary. But I'm glad that we got the apology and we got the proposal. And, you know, she was like, all right, as long as you don't do that again because it was stupid. Yay, together. So I'm really happy for that. Also, Moira should never have died, so I'm totally on board with her being alive. Plus, it also helps, you know, like you were saying, it helps explain why Mia was a rich socialite and how she and William were so much better adjusted because they had Moira holding it together, I guess. So that's good.
I forgot to mention a big one, mm-hmm. and it's like the end of the episode, just like the one Elicity scene at the end of the episode when she gets, like, when we see what happens when she crosses through and the other side of the door or whatever, and it's like in their own little paradise dimension, mm-hmm. and she's back to, like, I don't know, I guess it's, people are saying it's season 2 Felicity, like, with her hair and her outfit,
yeah,
and
yeah,
all their little, like, memento things in the office, and he's, like, waiting for her, and then now they have, like, all time in the world to do whatever they want to do together. It was, and this was after me watching, like, the Good Place series finale. Aww. And so it was, like, very, like, emotional. So, aww. Yeah, that was really nice.
Okay. Well, I'm glad. I'm glad you liked that. I will say that...
I'm glad you like that. Okay.
I will say that I liked it on an emotional level. Like you're saying, like, it's so nice. It's nice to see, like, okay, we have, you know, this is, like, the reward, and, like, now we can be together, and, like, you know, I've waited for however long, and we have all the time in the world. That part's very sweet. Also, I liked, you know, like you guys already mentioned, Felicity's kind of reaction to maybe not wanting to meet Mia yet, because she wasn't ready to see her baby all grown up. And
very,
also,
very Alan of her.
Yes! and I also liked that they referenced, you know, poor William's always getting kidnapped. Zoff kidnapped in 2040, now he's kidnapped in 2020, like, make it stop. So, you know. And also, I think it's nice that, like, you know, Mia being able to save her brother in this timeline does help sort of propel, like, okay, well, I will save him in my timeline as well. So, like, that's nice. Even if, you know, Green Arrow and Canaries does not get picked up, we can imagine that she will, you know, hit back harder and be fine. I love, like, at this point, just because they had dropped so many hints about it, I didn't love the idea before, but now that it was obvious, I'm glad they followed through on John getting the Green Lantern ring. I don't know what that's going to mean. Like, I don't know if he and Lila are going to show up in Superman and Lois, or if they're going to show up on HBO Max. I don't know what's going on.
Oh,
but... Mm-hmm.
You know what, also, just, it kind of, going back to, like, the Green Arrow and the Canaries thing, and what the fuck happened to Connor? There's only two kids in the backseat of that car, and they were both Lila and Diggle's kids, Sarah Diggle and mm-hmm. John Diggle.
Well, they hadn't adopted him yet. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, but...
They're also moving to Metropolis.
Exactly,
so...
exactly. Weird.
Yeah.
Very weird indeed. So... so there's that. I did like, you know, Barry coming to hug Felicity and then, like, explain, like, telling her about Oliver's last moments. Like, that was, and, you know, Felicity absolving him of any guilt. That was very sweet. So yeah, overall, you know, I thought it was a nice way to celebrate the connections and the legacy. And I support, you know, my faves being alive. So cool. What did not spark joy?
Oh boy. There were a lot of plot holes in this episode, like, a lot of plot holes, and it just pissed me off, and I feel like there was a lot of moments that were sort of disrespectful to people who have been following and very heavily invested in Arrow for so long, but I'll start with, like, Sarah's conversation, or Sarah in general. So Sarah wasn't even that big a part in this episode, even though she was, like, constantly talking about Oliver throughout Crisis, specifically, like, the last two parts. And then you have her conversation with Barry in part 5 talking about how she has no connection to Star City anymore because Oliver is gone. He was the last of her old life. But there you have Quentin is back alive, so it makes her whole conversation pointless.
It's not her dad. It's not him. Some other dude.
Yeah. it's so awkward, so whatever. And then what annoyed me about Dinah is, yes, like, I can understand she no longer wants to be captain in the city because suddenly there's no crime, which I still don't buy, whatever. I was like, there's no crime, but yet Kit William is sitting here getting kidnapped.
Because you have police commissioner, Dinah. You have to maintain the peace. It's not over.
So, I don't know. I felt like that was a lame decision, but also as she's like traveling off on her little motorcycle and you're like, okay, well, this connects to the future and how she gets there. But then it just made me sad thinking about the fact that you have her say goodbye to all these people she knows, you have her say goodbye to Renee, and then no one's going to remember her, and she has lost all ties and connections to everybody that she loved in this universe. Like, I don't understand why do that. So it just made me really upset and really sad for her entire storyline, because it just makes her seem like an unimportant character to the last few seasons, and now she has no relationships with anybody anymore, and that's just really sad. And then all the dead people coming back, so it, like Tati said, it would just make more sense if Oliver had just died on the island. Like, what is the point now? if you died there, then no one would have died. So then they would have all continued on their merry way, right? But in this instance, it's just like erases all the previous seasons of Arrow. And it just made me laugh when Moira was sitting there telling, I don't know if she was talking to Thea or like Emiko.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yes, she's like, oh, Oliver brought back all the people who didn't affect his personal journey. Is the most bullshit thing ever.
So they wonder, like, Ollie, because Thea was wondering why Ollie couldn't fix the fact that their dad died, and Moira's like, well, you know, without dad, then Oliver wouldn't be the person that he is today. So it just kind of made, like, everybody else's death, like, y'all deaths were, like, irrelevant to Oliver's journey, apparently.
Right.
Yeah. It's really, really dumb. And what even pissed me off more was the fact that it's A, selfish, and B, if we're talking about, oh, well, Oliver helped rebirth this universe, so he played God and decided to bring back whoever he personally wanted and kept everyone else out, which was super just insulting. Like, besides Moira, who I agree shouldn't have died to begin with, everybody else, like, it just changes the entire series. You have watched up to this point, and then you're telling people that none of that mattered anymore because they're all just going to be resurrected. And what's bullshit about it is that they might not have affected Oliver in the way that he thinks they affected him, like, directly, but everyone in his life affected him. So he literally changed his own life too, but he's not even around to, like, live it, so he doesn't even care. And that pisses me off. The whole Felicity going to the monitor and going to the Paradise Dimension, I like that scene for the emotional reasons, but my issue with it is that she basically decided to die, essentially, without her children knowing. She's gone off, never to be contacted again by them. She never gets to see whether they get married or have kids or do whatever they want with their careers or who enters their life. Like, she doesn't see them grow old, and she had that chance, and she decided to leave and not tell them about it. Like, I just feel like that's a strange way to cap off your OTP, whom you said have done everything to protect the people that they love, but then one of them has just gone off on her own to leave them behind. And that just doesn't sit well with me. Especially since they don't know where she went. So they might want to contact her, and they'll live the next few decades never knowing what happened to their mother. Like, that's just fucked up. And then the saving William in the present was really unnecessary to me. Like, halfway through the episode, I'm like, oh, I guess we're doing this now. Okay. I mean, it brought a really great action sequence with Oliver. That was incredible. But other than that, I didn't really see the point, because they had to remind me. I couldn't remember who that guy was. Like, they had to flash back to this little book. I was like, okay, I guess. Fine. So that was unnecessary. And then I think the worst part of the whole thing is that they actively decided to bring back all these people. And then they did leave out Earth One Laurel. And that is incredibly disrespectful, because, like, even if you're going to argue that she has the doppelganger and she's come a long way and they're setting it up for the potential spinoff, but if Laurel's going to be in the future anyway, why not bring back Earth One Laurel? Like, they're not going to be sharing the same space in the future. you know? So it felt like even further disrespect to her character because she's been disrespected for so long, and then they had the opportunity to bring her back and they didn't. And I just feel like that was really wrong and messed up.
Yeah. I will say, like, you make an interesting point about the whole Felicity choosing to leave when the monitor, like, came for her. Because that, I mean, that is a good point about not just, like, cutting out of, like, I did my 20 years and now I'm done kind of thing. Where they could have done it where, you know, she was an older Felicity, but she wasn't, like, at the end of her life Felicity. And yeah. I feel like, you know. I mean, it exactly. would have been
so, especially
like,
if she was going to go back to being young in the paradise dimension, you know?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
I feel like they could have, you know, she could have had a full life, and even
because
like
there was no reason for this, it.
Like, yeah, like her and her where she stopped. We have to assume that she's been alone for the past 20 years, just like mourning all of her, like never loved anybody else again, and that's just kind of like sad, you know. Even if you have, you know, a love of your life, people still have to kind of like eventually grow up and move on. She's got like her kids that she's raising together now, because now William and Mia are raised together with probably the help of like Moira and everybody else. It would have been okay for me, I think, if you know she got to enjoy like the last of her life, and finally at the end she gets to go back and be with Oliver in the paradise dimension. I feel like that would have been like a, you know, a life well lived. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Oliver probably would have wanted that for her. So yeah. So I definitely think you make like a really good point about that. For me, like, I agree, like, definitely with the William thing, because it just seems a weak plot to kind of like end the series with, especially since apparently it was Biggle's fault because he didn't let Oliver kill the burn guy, like when Oliver wanted to kill him, and so he just went to jail. And like the guy's like reasoning for wanting to kidnap Willem and like throw him off a building was because he spent 8 years in Iron Heights. I'm like, why are you such a pussy, dude? Like, it was only 8 years. Like, 8 years is a long time, but it was only 8 years. So I feel like that reasoning was whole, just like, it felt weak and it felt kind of dumb. Uh-huh. Yeah, it was really weak kind of plot point on why William needed to be kidnapped. And it's not like Oliver's dead. Like, who are you getting back at? Like, it's not like he could be mad at you for killing his kid because he's not around. Exactly. So none of that made any sense. And then I definitely agree with you about like the whole dead people being brought back to life. And then they're not even all the same. So like Moira knows she's from a different Earth, but apparently Tommy is from Earth One, or like previously Earth One. And then, you know, you've got Thea and Roy, who are from our Earth and never died, so they all have, like, the same memories. But Emiko is, like, also alive, but also not crazy. And so it's just, like, how do all of these different mismatched histories make sense in one world when, like, Tommy dying was why Malcolm was, like, invested in Thea and trying to get her to, like, follow in his footsteps? That, you know, so like her story is still the same, but somehow Tommy's still there. And you know, the whole like with Laurel's path on to becoming Black Canary, how does that change now that Tommy never died? And apparently Tommy's death and Moira's death meant nothing to Oliver, because having them back didn't change anything he did. So all of that just kind of like, I don't know, they're trying to like have their cake and eat it too a little bit. And you know, if you want to gloss over it just because it's a series finale and you want to have all the characters back, fine, but just like the chronology of it in this new timeline just does not make sense.
I totally agree with this. I think like it's easy, like if you were to go by the comic book explanation for why, like it makes sense, and like that's what they should have just easily done. Like Oliver, when Oliver pieced back the universe, he had to take like what was available, right? Because everything was gone. So that's how you come together and get all these people alive, because they were alive on whatever universe he was piecing back together. But instead, they went with that dumbass explanation of, oh, it's the people that didn't change his life or whatever, which makes no sense. Like, yeah. Literally just so that Mark Guggenheim could spit in Laurel fans' faces one more time and have Laurel not be alive. which, and also, I don't, he, speaking of creators slash, you know, people on the other side of the camera who are, you know, talking shit to fans, he responded to someone about, you know, Laurel and about Black Canary being like, oh, well, basically Laurel fans don't matter because Black Canary isn't even a top seller. And a top seller would only be 80,000 comic books.
Yeah.
Like that thing. And I was like, you little piece of shit. So.
Gail Simone must despise this man.
That's why she's always like, let's talk Arrow.
Expert. Ask me anything.
So, yeah. Anyway. I didn't like that, and I thought that the way that they tried to explain it was dumb. They should have just gone with no explanation or my superior explanation, which is from the comic books. So anyway, outside of that, I'm guessing they didn't have Manu Bennett come down for that. Like, I'm sure that they just edited the scene where Moira lives instead of dies. But it's weird to not, like, such a big villain like Slade. If you're going to have, like, one last...
Or Prometheus, too.
Or Prometheus. Like, he could be alive. Yeah, he could be alive on the Earth. Yeah. But if you're going to have, like, a last hurrah with a villain, then it should be one of the big villains of the series and not this rando.
Yes.
Like, we spent half of the episode, like, May and I, when you were watching, we were like, did this happen? Are these flashbacks or are these new flashbacks? Like, is this... what are they... And what are they telling us? They're not telling us anything. And then it resulted in the kidnapping thing, which, like I said in my likes, I like that the kidnapping thing ties back to William being kidnapped, but in terms of it being the final episode just event, it was just so lame. I don't care about this random man kidnapping William, and like Jessica said, neither would Oliver, because Oliver is dead. Maybe Oliver and Felicity were up there in the... Well, actually, no, they were not. Felicity was in... There, she was there experiencing it in her life. So I guess maybe Oliver was like up there in Paradise Mansion being like, God damn, William, stop getting kidnapped. You're getting kidnapped in all times. Stop it.
Ooh, I also want to add, like, if Emiko's good now, then she never tried to kill Oliver, which means Felicity wouldn't have had to go on into hiding from the Ninth Circle.
Also true. We just imagine that whatever, some other thing happened that led to that. But it's very confusing with all these, you know, crisscrossing explanations. So other things I disliked. I just don't understand how this is happening in the same, like, world as Green Arrow and the Canaries. Like, I was wondering when the documentary started, and Dinah is in the documentary talking about Oliver, and then she's, like, getting named captain, and or whatever, and it's like, she's gonna disappear in, like, 2 days, supposedly, apparently, so these things will no longer be relevant. So why are you even showing me these things? Like, why? Why is this happening? And also, like, how does Laurel become a time traveler after this? Why? How? With what? Like, so, I don't know. It's just, like, I think at the very least you could have shown her decision to do that. I don't know. It's just strange. Because they obviously know about Green Arrow and the Canaries because they talk about William. So they just didn't feel like connecting it because they obviously don't believe that the show is happening either.
And, like, why do none of, like, Roy and Thea have no, like, response to seeing Mia when they should not know who Mia is?
They already felt it in their hearts.
It kind of felt like she was a ghost in the scenes, because in the group scenes, no one kind of interacted with her. And then she also went off, she was the only person to go solo and not have a partner team up with her. So it's just like, was she there or was she in our imagination all along?
Maybe. Mia of our hearts. But yeah, so that was dumb. I still think that no crime, you know, Oliver brought back no crime land.
Yeah.
He's stupid. He's dumb, you know. But I especially, like, May had already brought it up first, and she made an excellent point that I have never gotten. What were we talking about that we were really mad about? Oh, right, Felicity. Felicity making that choice. Like, yeah, it never made sense even from the end, you know, of season 7 or whatever. But back then we could pretend like we weren't exactly sure where she was going. Although I had been right this entire time that she was going to Paradise Dimension to be with Oliver in the afterlife. Thank you, me. But like, why have her make that explicit decision? Like, yeah, 20 years was long enough. I'm done waiting. Let's just go die and be with Oliver. Why not just show the end of Felicity's life and have it be a natural death? It doesn't make any sense for it not to be, because it would be equally as emotional, or more so, that Oliver has been waiting for her all this time. And it's fine, because he has eternity, you know? And she has been waiting for Oliver all this time, and it's fine, because they have eternity. So there's no reason why she was like, I need to go now to be in this one office space with Oliver for eternity. So that together we can just bemoan every time that our children are in danger of dying because we are not there. So whatever. It was just okay. So I liked the scene in itself. Like, I thought they did a good job with it together, and I thought it was nice that Emily came back and they made it work out, gave her that emotional grace note. But I hate that they chose that in the first place as her, you know, choosing to exit this life rather than the life just ending and the monitor coming to take her. But, oh well. yeah, I think that's pretty much it. Just like, I just felt like it was kind of a letdown in terms of plot and in terms of like, yes, everyone's back, but we don't really see as much build up as we could have. Like, the people that have been here all along, we could have gotten more build towards their futures. The futures that we already know from the previous thing, or it's like the John one where it's like it came out of nowhere and it's like, well, now he is going to be Green Lantern on some as yet unmentioned show, or perhaps no show. Congrats to him. And also, yeah, you mentioned, of course, Connor, but then like they're moving to Metropolis. So how do we get back to, you know, when does JJ go back? Basically. I don't know. So we'll see. We'll see. And we won't see because it won't get picked up. But if it does, we'll see. All right. Do we have, we don't have predictions because we can't, because it's over. Do we have any Arrow feedback, or was Tasha the only one who abandoned us?
Tasha was the only one that gave us Arrow feedback, and maybe she is still in mourning.
We love you, Tasha. All right. So, with that being said, we will now move on to Black Lightning, the Book of Markovia, Chapter 1. So, Lynn's addiction, though it did not directly address Lynn's addiction. Jefferson, Anissa, and Jennifer discover that the ASA is now hunting the entire Pierce family. Meanwhile, Lynn does the unthinkable. Is it knocking out?
Is the addiction the unthinkable thing? Like, what is? Because she did a lot in this episode.
Yeah. All right. Also, Jennifer comes clean to her family, and then, you know, gets shut out of everything in her family. So that's what's going on with her. What sparked joy in this episode?
I was very pleasantly surprised to see Grace in this pop up in this episode. So that little reunion between Anissa and Grace was really cute. And I like that it resulted in her coming back, because that was also something that was like a nice little pleasant surprise that I wasn't expecting. And I like that it seems like this time with the, whatchamacallit, starts with the P, the people. What are they called?
Markovians?
Not the Markovians.
ASA?
The people that Anissa thinks are her employees.
That is a great question.
In the forest. Anyway.
Oh, yeah,
her
yeah,
time
yeah.
with them has kind of like given her a new perspective on her powers and how to control them. So now she can be on Anissa's level. And we don't have to, hopefully, I'm not going to have to see her, like Anissa, basically taking care of this grown woman and calling it, you know, an equal relationship. I feel like now it feels like Grace feels healthier and that she can stand on her own in the relationship, and that maybe if she stays, which hopefully she will, hopefully they'll up her to a series regular next season, we'll get to see more of Grace's powers intentionally and being kind of like transform into her own superhero. So that's good stuff. Predicty stuff. TC and Gambi's relationship is really, really cute. I like that TC seems like another like mini Jeff to Gambi, and that he wants to protect him and feels kind of like a father figure to him. I like that Lady Eve is back. A lot of people were back this episode that were great. Lala was back. That was another pleasant surprise. I wasn't expecting to see him. So it was Lala and Lady Eve's dynamic was really, really intriguing. And it almost feels like outside of Markovia, like Black Lightning is already trying to like pivot towards a different story, even though they haven't really finished up this one. But I like the implications of having both of those characters back and aware of each other in their same orbit. So that was good. I liked, let's see. I thought the Adele being kidnapped by Jefferson and Nyssa and Gambi, there's a lot of tension there, and them confusing Adele into getting his information to clone him, basically, like a digital deep throat to get the ASA to back off. I thought that was a good plan until it wasn't. Jennifer and Brandon continue to be cute. The Geoforce name drop, my prediction is almost complete. Just like put it together. Yes. Really excited about that. Really excited that Brandon is like, Jennifer's just like spilling all the tea to Brandon, so he's just gonna know like everything about everybody. And there's no like tiptoeing around it or people trying to like keep him in the dark just because he's just kind of like getting thrown into this. Both him and TC. So it's kind of cool to get some new, like, fresh blood into the superhero group. It's not really a like, but I guess I can't, like, not like him. Like, ASA guy, Grail, that's been, you know, he put out his little manifesto, like, anything happens to me, I'm going to tell the truth about what's going on here. So I guess I can stand him. And it's been consistent because we've seen him acting funny, are a little confused about like what's happening or a little bit hesitant about, reluctant about what they're doing for a couple episodes now. So at least there was like a story there and some development. What else? Khalil. Jennifer finally knows about Khalil. I think she has every right to be mad at Jefferson, because basically everybody in her family knew about Khalil except for Jennifer. And I feel like that was, even though it was going to be, you know, they, you know, we didn't want to hurt your feelings or whatever, but that was like need to know information for right. her. Like it hurts her feelings even more because she doesn't know what's going on. And she wound up like putting her family at a disadvantage in this Khalil fight because she did not know what's going on. So, you know, she should have known about it. And I feel like that's all I want to say about this episode.
I actually really love that the episode opened with Jennifer finally coming clean to her dad. She's like, "Dad, I've been working with Odell. This is what's been going on." And she kind of gave him like what her thought process was, just like the message she, I don't think she ever actually sent it to Anissa, but that she was going to send to Anissa about why she was doing what she was doing. But now she's like actually coming clean, which was great, because for so long the Pierce family has been separate, and they clearly haven't been communicating with each other, just like we saw with the whole Jennifer learning about Khalil in this episode without, while everybody else knew. So that was a really great scene. And even though, you know, Jefferson acted very, not irrationally, but, you know, he's like, "Oh my God, you've been working with Odell. I'm going to go stop him." But I actually like the fact that we sort of had one plan, but there were two different sides to the plan. They all were trying to accomplish the same thing, like take down Odell, but very differently. So you had like Jennifer's trying to kill him, obviously, and then Anissa and Jefferson were plotting and working together to get him. And I really like that they actually, I like the whole interrogation scene, because it's really rare to see Odell in a situation where he is not the powerful one, mm-hmm. or like the manipulating one. So I like the fact that they actually got to trick him successfully, because that rarely happens on the show. And it was nice that they finally got one win against him that didn't need to have him, you know, shot or something like that. I agree. I really like that Grace came back. I wasn't expecting that either. And, you know, her seeming better health-wise was nice. So hopefully we'll get to see, like, more of her going forward. And I also really love Gambie and TC's relationship so far, because for a while it seemed like Gambie was just sort of there in the background. But now that TC's around, they're both kind of getting a lot more to do, and TC's being like a really important character to figuring out things like about Lady Eve. Lady Eve is back. I honestly believed for a second that she was still dead, but then when Lala goes to see her, and that whole scene was great. I'm so happy that she's back, and I'm looking forward to like seeing how that plays out. And yes, I'm glad that Jennifer knows about Khalil in general. And even though I don't know where this is going and why this is happening, Lynn and Tobias's dynamic is just strange, but it's very fascinating to watch. Yes, mm-hmm, I don't understand, but it's very entertaining. I'm just like, okay, you guys just can go at each other all day. I don't understand what's happening, but that's fine. But I actually like that she had some sort of plan, and she wasn't just like spiraling on green light this episode. She actually had something other than green light to do. So that was nice.
Even though she needed green light to do it.
Yes.
All part of the plan. All part of the plan. But yes, I love, you know, her actually getting one up on Tobias, and also, you know, breaking out in the first place. So it was great to see her being active, and, you know, like you said, taking another role outside of just taking the green light. Plus, Tobias is, you know, kind of like an annoying asshole, but but it is like with Lynn, he doesn't just get to mouth off and, you know, not expect consequences for that. So that was good. Also, I'm glad that, you know, she has someone right now to kind of in Grail, I guess, to help her, and like, because I feel like she's been so increasingly isolated from her family. It'd be nice if it was not this random man named Grail and was a member of her family, but oh well. I also, I'm very happy that Jennifer knows what's up with Khalil. And also I liked the scene where Jennifer was talking to her father and explaining to him what happened with the Odells and like what she wanted to do, etc. So I'm glad that she, you know, put all her cards on the table, even if he does not do the same. I also liked, like May said, Odell being held captive and for once not having the upper hand in the scenario. And actually being at a, you know, a point where he could be, you know, extinguished or just at least in trouble. And also, like, even Jefferson himself, despite, you know, not wanting Jennifer to get too killsy, did did in fact go a little overboard and had to be pulled back on his own. Also, we kind of talked about, like, Jennifer, you know, and her Murder Town ways. Yeah. In the previous podcast, but now she is talking about how, like, you know, people have died because of her actions. So and it is something.
I'm not sure if she cares.
Right. So it's like, I guess we'll see where that goes. But it is something at least that she's aware of that is being set up in some way, I guess, you know. I don't know how that'll turn out, but I'm glad we're discussing that. That is a thing that happens when you use powers on a wide scale. Love that Brandon is Geoforce, you know, definitely, especially the moment when he almost said Geoforce and then.
Yeah.
Anyway. Love that we got Grace back for a split second, but it was nice to, you know, they're still like on good terms. Like Jessica was saying, it feels like they can be on more equal footing now. And it's just nice to check in, because like we know why she can't be there, but at least it's like, hey, love you too, okay, see you later. Outside of that, like, yeah, I agree that Jennifer's rage was righteous, and I totally support her being upset with her dad for for her whole family for not telling her, because it's unfair since she's the one that's most affected by it. Glad that we got to see Lala again, and that Lala took us to Lady Eve. So glad. We thought that it was just going to be like a, you know, one and done situation, but no, it definitely, you know, is, she's being set up as a big bad in her own right again, thankfully. And maybe that'll make, you know, because she was the one that originally put out the hit on Gambi. So Gambi will be perhaps endangered once more. Perhaps something will be going on there. And we do have TC just waiting in the wings to be our, you know.
Oh, God.
So, not that I'm saying, like, it sparks joy that Gambi may die. More just that maybe we'll get a storyline, you know, like, going, tying us back to Gambi being on the run. So, yeah. I think that I'm excited for where things will go next in the episode. So, or in the season because of this episode. What did not spark joy?
Lynn, just in general. Like her multiple people, Gambi and Grail, both when they interacted with Lynn in this episode, was like, you look sick, like, what's wrong with you? And I'm just thinking about and how in the previous episode that Jeff was like, you have an addiction, and she's like, I think I would know because I'm a doctor. And, like, you know, but people are telling her that she looks sick, she has withdrawal symptoms, and yet she does not still want to acknowledge that she's addicted to green light. The whole, her getting Grail to bring her her purse, not because it has, just because it has, like, super secret stuff in there that she doesn't want Blair to have because he's killed 3 kids trying to recreate her genius, but because she knows that there's some green light in that purse. I really hate this prolonged addiction storyline for her, and the fact that they won't call it what it is, or she won't call it what it is. And the fact that she had this whole side plot with Grail. I agree with you, like, on that. Like, the whole plot to get Tobias out so that they can't use his bone marrow was cohesive, but it puts Lynn in this whole side plot away from everybody else in her family. We had, like, this huge blow up where Lynn basically runs away from home, and now Jefferson, Anissa, and Jennifer are just gonna kind of, like, drop that thread, like, I guess she's gone, well. So that's, it's kind of like, forgot about her, and then, like, her whole side plot is with random ASA dude to help Tobias. And then, like, I guess it was smart of her to give herself strength powers in order to, because Tobias definitely was going to try to double cross her, and he did, and she knocked him out. But I'm not really sure where that goes or how she thinks that she can contain Tobias now that he's outside of the ASA, and he knows that she can give him powers temporarily. It's a little bit uncontained. And the fact that she didn't tell Jefferson or anybody in her family, it's kind of like, when that thread does get pulled, it's just going to isolate her even more. I don't know. Are they trying to turn her down into, like, the evil path? Like, have her and Tobias be, like, evil together? I don't know. But I haven't liked it all season. I haven't liked it since last season. And I probably won't like it for a while, because I think it's just kind of, like, just really deconstructing and ruining her character from where we met her in the beginning. So that's not great. That's probably the end of my.
Okay. Yeah, I think they're all great points about Lynn. And all, to add on to that, because I don't want to repeat too much, but what is frustrating too is that this was called Lynn's addiction, and like Tati said in the summary, it didn't really focus on any of that. Like, like you said, Jeff noticed that she was, something was wrong with her. Jennifer pointed it out too. So like, where's her family? You know, why aren't they like, why didn't they take a moment to get away from the main plot to actually like do, you know, have an intervention or something? I don't know. But it just speaks to the overall disconnect that this family has had in general. Like, this is the first time in a while that Jennifer, Anissa and Jeff have worked together, like been in the same room in their suits, doing things together. Everybody's just kind of been off on their own. And it's been very frustrating because it's been happening for so long that it would be nice for them to actually just connect some more and communicate with each other. I think like TC telling Khalil, or telling Jennifer that Khalil loves her because, you know, Khalil told him. I was like, is he part computer? I don't understand. But I guess, you know, he's, that has like
whatever
to happen.
Whatever that Chip Odell put into him had to be some kind of like technology.
Yeah, about that.
Right.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then Markovia kidnapping Lynn. I was like, okay, so we're jumping into yet another plot. But I'm still unclear about Markovia's motivations. Like, we've been told that they intend to use the pod kids as weapons. But at the same time, that we've been told that from the ASA. And I don't trust the ASA. So it's like fake news. You know, like what does Markovia really want? We don't get anything out of anyone. There's no main character from Markovia who has crossed the line and come in and had conversations with anyone so that we know what's going on. It's just like they're this mysterious group of people who just show up and they're this perceived threat, but there's nothing going on there. And it's weird that we were told that they were basically like the villains of season 3, but they haven't really done much at all. Like, we see them every 5 episodes and that's it. So I don't know. It's very frustrating this late in the season. And then I would have liked to see, like, Grace showed up and it was great and it was surprising. It was nice that she got those scenes with Anissa, but also now that she has a clean bill of health, I guess, I wanted to see more of her development on screen, because I feel like everything with Grace happens off screen and I don't like that. And again, I feel like it's a commitment thing. They don't want to give her stuff. They don't want to make her a regular. They don't want to do anything. So it's just like she's there and it's just focused on her and Anissa's stuff, but she's not really like a fully realized character yet. And then when it comes to like Jennifer, my final point is like her wanting, I still don't like the fact that she still wants to kill so bad, specifically like she wants to kill Odell. And so we see all of that, but then it's strange because she's so intent on killing him, but then she, like, her voice shook and she was really shaken over the fact that she thinks she killed those people that she bombed when Odell told her to. So like, I don't understand how you could feel that way and yet want to kill him so badly. I know that he's like a bad man.
Matter of fact about it, that it's just like,
yeah, for sure.
When that, like, killing someone is not the only way to like bring people to justice.
Exactly. Yeah. 100%. And that's all from me.
For the most part, I don't like seeing Lynn in this position repeatedly over and over again. And I don't feel like, I guess there was more forward movement with her storyline this episode, which I liked, but in terms of her being isolated from her family and you know, her not really seeming to care about what's going on with them and vice versa, is a big issue. Also, as much as I, you know, like that Jennifer found out about Khalil and that she had the correct reaction to have been left out, I don't think it makes any sense that she was. Like, why would they think that Jen couldn't, like, I guess they just thought she couldn't handle that information, and then what, you know? She was already going off on a potential killing spree, so I don't know why not tell her, hey, be careful in your killing spree, because you might kill Khalil. Because she doesn't want to kill Khalil, so that would actually be beneficial to tell her. But anyway, speaking of, my issue with TC doing his little, you know, SD card removal of Khalil's memories was that Lynn already did this like 5 episodes ago. So yeah. If y'all were communicating, then you could have told Jennifer that 5 episodes ago, and then we would not be on the same plot point with this storyline that we were that long ago. So yeah, it seems like some things, like Khalil and Markovia, are moving at a, like, turtle, you know, the speed of a turtle. And I don't know why it's necessary to drag it out for so long. And also, I think that it's whatever the needs of the storyline are, it's, like, are requiring certain characters to act in ways that they should not be acting. Especially Lynn. But also, I guess, just in a way, Jefferson, just in the way that he treats Anissa and Jennifer in different scenarios. So, yeah, I'm hoping that we're going to see as the season, you know, wraps up, and as we get more hopeful movement on the villain front, that we'll get to see more of the interactions that we actually care about and the family dynamics that are important, especially for next season. Hopefully people have complained about this. I don't know what people are saying in the fandom, but hopefully next season we'll actually get to see the Pierces be, you know, stronger together. Do we have any Black Lightning predictions, speaking of?
No, other than my evil Lynn Tobias.
Yes. I actually think that that's, you know, I think that that's a possibility. I am thinking, like, or not necessarily, like, evil or OGP, but that they are clearly on their own team in a way, you know?
Yeah. Which is sad.
Yeah.
Yeah, other than, you know, Geo-Force actually becoming him actually getting to finish the sentence and say Geo-Force. Oh, I wonder if, like, next week is finally when we see Wayne Brady, so maybe that's
the Marco. Yeah, I was expecting to see him in the whole episode, and I was like, damn, was I wrong? Was I off?
Yeah, I remember we were watching, and Jessica came in like, so how's Wayne Brady? No, like, nothing. No. Not existing.
Yeah. So maybe we'll finally get to understand what the Markovians actually want next episode. That's about it.
And I guess I'm gonna put out there that Henderson will die heroically, because I don't see him just packing up and going home. I'm sorry. I know. I don't
he
want
could
it.
Move
but
to Metropolis once Freeland.
He could move to Metropolis.
Everybody moves to Metropolis. that was one thing that was surprising, that Odell was from Gotham.
That was a fun drop.
It's very Yeah.
You know what would be interesting if, like, they took Henderson and they sent him to Gotham to be, like, the head of the GCPD? that's not a prediction, but it would be fun. Yeah, I mean, other than them saving Lynn, I don't, you know, my prediction pool is very shallow.
Well, did we get feedback for Black Lightning?
We did. We have Paulina, who is our Black Lightning correspondent. So she sent us feedback. One second. Yes. She says, hi, all. I hope you're well and that you all have a great weekend. I have quickly sent some Black Lightning feedback because there's so much going on in this episode. Her likes. Don't recall the last time that we got Black Lightning, Thunder, and Lightning all in a scene fighting together, but it's been woefully far too long. I love just seeing the three of them out in the field. And again, it was great to see Anissa Thunder again. Lynn's story this week was certainly an improvement from last week. And for that reason, I'm going to put her arc in the like section. Tobias and Lynn are such a bizarre duo. And I like watching how much Lynn hates Tobias, but how she nonetheless has to get him across the perimeter. Lynn punching him out was great, but Lynn having to siphon the abilities of one of the medikids was probably not so great, as I presume that there will be repercussions. Let's see. Geo-Force tease. I like Jennifer and Brandon's friendship quite a lot, and Jefferson doing the whole threatening dad thing on Brandon, which is cute. Although I don't think the actors have that much romantic chemistry, unlike China and Jordan, who I think have fantastic chemistry, Jennifer and Brandon's potential for romance is a lot stronger than Jen and Khalil's ever was. And I think it's because Jen is in a better place, and her connection with Brandon is a lot more organic and natural because they are equals in their relationship. I agree with that. Thunder Grace cuteness in this episode. I love how Grace realized the source of her constant uncontrollable shifting was her issues with abandonment, and I think her having to take care of Anissa after she was stuck by Khalil and her interactions with Jefferson probably were the catalyst for Grace coming to that realization. I also love how she tells Anissa that it's her connection that grounds her now. I really like the place that Anissa and Grace are currently in, especially because the season started off pretty rocky for them. The show just needs to stay on this course with Thunder Grace. Jen telling Jeff that she felt abandoned by her family and that Odell made her feel powerful, which led to him manipulating her, was important. We've been saying this whole season that Jen was so isolated from her family and that the Pierce family was splintered, so I'm glad that Jennifer actually got to voice this. Dislikes. While I love Thunder Grace content, I did think that Grace telling Anissa that she realized the source of her constant shifting was an abrupt revelation. Again, this is a case of tell, don't show, because writers don't afford Grace or the relationship enough screen time. I'd like to see Grace come to that realization far more explicitly throughout the first half of season 3. Get why Jen reacted the way she did to seeing Khalil, but her choosing to continue to bind her father and sister instead of, I don't know, letting them go the moment she saw the ASA agents grab Odell and run was incredibly stupid. It just seemed like it was a really easy way for Odell to escape with the rest of the ASA agents. That was Flash level bad in terms of villains getting away for plot force. She also didn't like TC telling Jen that Khalil loves her because this is clearly setting up a plot for Khalil's rehabilitation. I knew this was going to happen eventually, but I love the way Jordan played his version of Khalil, and I absolutely don't want some sappy story of Jen saving Khalil, especially right after it was revealed that she was the one whose powers could stop him. Season 2 made me hate the Jen-Khalil romance, and I can never come around to another story of Jen being driven by Khalil in some way. Yes. So she has other thoughts, but I will put all of these thoughts on Tumblr, which I don't think I did for last week, so sorry, but I will do it for this week's future. Yeah. I was going through it last week, y'all.
Gorgeous.
So thank you guys for that. Now let us nominate our final Ladies with Gumption and decide which one is the week. From side B, I guess Felicity had the gumption to abandon her children and go live with Oliver in the Paradise Dimension.
A bold. I guess she would say maybe Mia, since Mia was in a rut in the beginning of the episode because she couldn't save her brother, but in the present she was able to save her younger brother. Mm-hmm. So like that's like character development. So. Mm-hmm. Even though, like, there wasn't really a lot of strong choice, but of what we got from the women, Mia had the clear story, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
I can take that.
Black Lightning?
I guess I would...
Lynn?
Lynn has some options.
For, you know, just for coming up with a temporary metahuman power source, and then breaking Tobias out of ASA prison.
Yeah. So, who do we think wins? I think...
No one on side B.
Yeah, not side B. Let's go back to side A. I think that I would... I kind of want to say... It's hard. Because I really like both Nia and Beth's stories.
Yeah.
I think that Beth had a lot of gumption for it being her introduction to this world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So maybe she gets it. Yeah, but
she put herself in a very difficult situation, yeah, not knowing like what the outcome would be.
Yeah. But for me, like, you know, as a satisfied customer, Nia's came after a prolonged, you know, waiting for Nia to get some growth and screen time. So I was really happy to see her breaking out of, you know, the current route that writers had her in. So,
yeah. I guess I would lean a little bit more towards Nia, and I don't know if that is because, like, what you were saying about it being at a rut with the writers and her not really having a lot of focus, and just this, especially like in the beginning of the episode, her doubting herself and her breakup with Brainy, and kind of like growing through that and like processing through the episode to the point where she was actually good and she kind of actually like started believing in herself and in her powers again.
She dared to dream.
Really. What do you say, May? Tiebreaker.
Well, you know, the, you say Mia, right? Because I'm saying Mia, too.
Yeah, you're already 2 out of 3. Oh,
you just say Mia?
Yeah. I vote for Mia, yeah.
So my opinion does not matter.
Well, but is your opinion Mia, or is your opinion...
I'm really torn, because I feel like... I want to say Nia very strongly because of the emotional component to it, but at the same time, Beth walked into like the line of fire and didn't need much convincing to do so just because it was her sister and she needed to help her, so she just did it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I voted anyway, so I was going to actually... choose Beth by like a couple points.
all right. Well, Beth loses. And
ouch, Tati.
I'm sorry.
No, but Nia's a very strong choice, obviously.
All right. So with that in mind, welcome Nia to the, you know, Ladies of the Gumption Hall of Fame. You've already been here before, but just in case.
This is the first one this season, though, isn't it?
Oh, well, yeah. I guess she hasn't had much to do this season, so that makes sense. So thank you guys for coming. Remember to check back with us next week, where we'll finally have Flash, but we won't have Supergirl and Batwoman.
Superwoman.
It works. Combination. And in the meantime, you can always send us feedback at ladieswgumption@gmail.com. Or on Tumblr.com, ladieswgumption, and tweet us at DZTVGumption. Plus, listen to the podcast wherever it's available. Thank you, and good night.
Bye.
Bye.